This is the Shake and Wake Radio Network, where the truth is all that matters, and the truth will make you free.
He's living on the
Lion at shakeandwakeradio.com. shakeandwakeradio.com. You're listening to the Shake and Wake Radio Network, where the truth is all that matters, and the truth will make you free.
We're on a mission from God.
We're on a mission from God.
Man, you gotta understand, it's a lot bigger than any domestic problems you might be experiencing.
Ma'am, would it make you feel any better if you knew that what we're asking Matthew to do is a holy thing?
See, we're on a mission from God.
In 6 miles from Chicago, we got a full tank of gas, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
You're listening to the Shake and Wake Radio Network, where the truth is all that matters, and the truth will make you free. ShakeandWakeRadio.com.
Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, with John Durash of NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Learn how we the people are holding the system accountable with common law grand juries across the nation. John will be taking questions from the Shake and Wake Radio chat room, or you can Skype or call in. Visit NationalLibertyAlliance.org for more information. Now, the host of Ask John Common Law Questions from NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Thursday night program. Tonight is obviously Thursday, August 28th, and we're going to get right into it. Well, first, I want to bring something up. I was just talking with Gerard about a few things, and We believe, or at least I believe at this point, that we are very, very close. We sent out all of our letters to all of these judges and all of the courts. They went out on Monday, and it went out to 90 chief judges, 252, and this is all, federal court judges, 90 chief judges, 252 circuit court judges, 972 district court judges, and 103 chief clerks. There's 90 districts in the United States. There's a lot more courts than that, but there are 90 districts, and we send it to the main district court of each one of those districts. And we also sent it out to 13, what would you call them, appellate courts. So, and we filed it as an information concerning the fact that we have some serious problems in this country. We read the paper that we filed this past Monday. And I think it was a pretty bold paper. I think it was a pretty powerful paper. And ultimately, we put them on notice, and the people are going to take the nation back. And at this point, if they continue the way they're going, they're at war with the American people. And that is ultimately an assault against the United States of America. We the people. I was listening to a guy going by the name of, listening to the tapes on the Anti-Federalist Papers. I'm trying to think of his name. Bruno, that was it, Bruno. And I presume that's a pen name. I don't know if it's his real name. I got to look further into that part to see if that is a real person as far as a real name. But in any event, this guy really lays out the problems. I mean, it's like he had the ability to look into the future to see what would happen. And one of the things that he talked about was the concerning of the court system taking over and control of the United States. And that's pretty much where we're at. We're at that point. And he made the point that in the preamble of the Constitution for the United States of America, that preamble, when it led in to the people to make a more perfect union, he made the point that we're not talking about the states, we're talking about the people. In other words, if you live in New York or Jersey and you wanted to go to Texas tomorrow morning, as soon as your foot hits Texas, you're a Texan, if that's what you want to be. And that's the more perfect union that really the Constitution is talking about. He made the point that it cannot be the states, because if it was the states, then the federal government would be the whole and all the states would just disappear. It would be just one nation. And that is not
John,
how it was written. Yes.
Excuse me, John.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add something and ask your opinion on this. One of the hosts of a network that we listened to for many years, who really studied the Constitution and the Articles of Declaration and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, had posed the question, the fact that it says, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, that's like devil doublespeak, because there is either perfect or not perfect. There's no such thing as more perfect. If something's perfect, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that?
Well, I never thought about it. I never thought about it.
There's no such thing as more pregnant. You're pregnant or you're not. There's no such thing as more perfect. So they were bullcrapping us from the get-go, and it was that's devil doublespeak.
Well, I disagree with that conclusion, though. I think you got to remember that there was good intentions here by many, and there was bad intentions there by some. The enemy was a
It should have been a better union. We the people, in order to create a better union, that mm-hmm. would have been logical, but a more perfect is illogical, and that wording isn't grammatically incorrect. Incorrect, because there's no such thing as more perfect. Well, if you were perfect, if you were the perfect sacrifice, you are Jesus Christ. Let's say you were Jesus Christ, and you're perfect. You are the perfect lamb, the sacrifice. You are perfect. You are God. You are perfect. There's no way to make you more perfect. That's mm-hmm. all I was saying is it sounds disingenuous from the get-go, and that's what this host tried to say, that the Articles of Confederation only needed a Bill of Rights. We really didn't need the Constitution. The Constitution allowed a dictatorship to take place. So,
all right, well, I have a lot to say about that, but I'm not going to get into that at the moment. Maybe in a little while I will. I just want to get back to my point. But I'd like to just make the point that I never thought about the word more perfect. You do have a point there. It does seem to be a clumsy way of saying something. But, you know, I can't comment on it because I haven't really thought about it and considered it and looked at it in its context. So maybe another time I'll comment on that. But nevertheless, it is the Constitution with the Bill of Rights together that has given us the power and the authority and the ability to maintain whatever little freedom we have left to continue on. And it is the same documents that gives us the power and the authority to be able to take this whole thing back if we can get it done in time. And that's the key thing, and that's what we're here for, trying to do it in time. I've said this before, that we're very, very close. And, you know, who knows exactly when they're going to pull the plug. I think they've been trying for quite some time. But they haven't had the right event. They haven't had an event that really, you know, really started to take root and get legs to walk, so to speak. But they've been working on it, and I think all this writing stuff might have been part of that, and it just never worked. But they're looking for something. If they create their own event, that takes time. And so if they're creating an event, obviously, you know, well, we don't know where they're at if they have created an event to take place, but they are always working on that. But they will take the opportunity of an event that would come up and in order to trip this country. If this country trips before we get our work done, you know, then it's every person for themselves. We're not going to be able to really do much of anything, except for lock and load, you know, to protect our families and ourselves. There'll be riots in the streets. People will be looking for food. There'll be electricity would go off. It'll be a mess. People have no clue on how serious it could really be. They need to be thinking about this and realizing this and preparing for this possibility. Anybody, especially anybody with NLA, if you haven't prepared for this, then you haven't been paying attention. You haven't thought about it. You should be ready for an event like that that could come up. And you have to have a plan. But nevertheless, what we want to do is cut it off at the pass. We want to stop this before it gets to that point. And we need to stabilize our states. And that's the only way we're going to do this. We can stabilize our states very quickly if we're in power. And I do believe they're going to be very close to be in power. As I was mentioning, we sent out all of these letters. And actually, there were bills, true bills, of information, and which became a mandamus. A bill of information ultimately is a mandamus. It's an order from the king. It's an order from the people. And the grand jury is the people. And we did this from the perspective of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So we've notified the entire judicial process on the federal level. We've notified them of the facts that we know what's going on. We know what they're doing. And we're giving them the opportunity to make it right. And if not, then what they're doing is they've made war against us. This morning I sent out the letter to Scalia. I held back a couple extra days on that because I didn't, and that was part of the plan, because we wanted to get our 50th state in there. We now 100% unified across the nation. We have all 50 states on board, and we've constituted every county in the United States, 3,100, and I believe it's 34. I've been saying 42. I was just looking up. Those numbers change, by the way. But right now it's 42, I believe. And, 32, I'm sorry, 3,132. Well, nope, let me fix that again, 3,134. On our website, we show 3,133. One county was accidentally deleted. I've been looking to find out which one that was. I know I have a note someplace, and when we get to it, we'll reestablish that county. But anyway, we have done the entire nation. And that's why we wanted to hold off so that we can put that final seal in there, 50 seals going to Scalia. So that letter went out today. It went out to Scalia. And we're anticipating some action. And I believe we're going to get action. You know, we've heard that there are good judges. I have never met any of them yet, but we heard that there are. It only takes one. Only takes one. And then another one halfway there. You know, you start to get a couple of judges that come on board. The next thing you know, you're going to get a landslide because they know they're going to go to jail, the rest of them, unless they come on board. We've offered them the olive branch in this paper. You know, we're good. We're not coming out after them as long as they do the right thing, and they do it now. They don't do the right thing, they've indicted themselves, and we're coming out after them. And we made that point in that letter. I think anybody who was there that heard that read or led, shall I say, really, the information, bill of information. And you can go up onto nationallibertyalliance.org and read that bill of information. It's on the news page. It should be the, one of the top papers up there. It's dated the 25th, I believe. It was Monday, and that's when it went out. And like I said, Scalia went out today. So we've been trying to really build an elite leadership. We're at that point where we really have to get working on that. And we might possibly shut off a half hour early tonight so that we can take personal phone calls for people who want to become part of that elite leadership. We need one person from every state, one person who's very dead serious, that understands that they have to get busy, that we have to organize their state, and that we have to get ready for the worst-case scenario, especially when we get into power. And we're about to get into power, so I believe, anyway. And so, therefore, I think it's time that we really get that leadership and start meeting on a closed room. I don't know how often, bare minimum once a week, but maybe more than that, as we're getting ready to move into authority if things go the way we hope. And nevertheless, you know, if it doesn't go the way we want it to go quickly and it tarries for a couple of weeks or a month, and we'll keep putting the pressure on. We got a lot of other plans and thoughts and ideas and putting the pressure on these people, and we're doing it, and we will continue to put that pressure on until something breaks. And so it'll come one way or the other. Unless the collapse comes before, it'll come. And in any event, when it does come, we have to be ready. So I'm going to give you my phone number. Most people have this phone number, and you know, if you're going to call me, you'll get a message, and it'll tell you when you can call me, when you can't call me. So if you do call me, you know, only call me during those hours. But tonight, after tonight's program, I'd like to get a call from anybody who wants to really get serious and really organize their state to make sure that we have one person on board at all times, paying attention, listening and understanding the program and the process and the procedures by which we are operating and how we're going to go forward step by step. And once we get in, how we're going to go forward step by step to take control of our states. And it's only going to take a small group of people in each state to do that. But nevertheless, we have to have people who are going to follow the instructions and do it correctly, not to go off on some, you know, a harebrained idea to start just indicting people. That's not what we're here for. We're here to save the nation. And anybody that's here to get revenge or to do crazy things, I think they just need to leave us, really. Just go away, because we don't need you, because you're only going to destroy what we're doing. The time will come when these people will have to pay the toll. But right now, it's time to protect the state. We need to get our courts into order. We need to bring them under common law. We need to bring the district attorneys or the prosecutors in order and under the law. They need to understand what their job really is. We need to get a hold of the sheriff and read the Riot Act to him. He needs to bone up on the Constitution. He needs to understand that we are in a state of emergency and that we need to prepare for the worst-case scenarios. And we need to reestablish you know, a lot of things. We have to get the militia going. We have to reestablish our armories and get boned up in there. We have to prepare for, again, an emergency situation where the assets or the resources, shall I say, of each county remains in that county. It belongs to that county. It's for the survival of that county. And any excess of resources, of course, we overflow to the counties next door and so on across the nation. And in that process, those resources, we do a trade with the other counties in order to have the necessary resources to survive under emergency situations. We need to be preparing for this. And we've been talking about this on, off and on for the past year, but we haven't really focused in on it. It's time to focus in on this. It's time to really prepare. We need one dead serious individual for every state, one very serious individual who's going to be involved, who's going to be always be at the meeting, who's always going to take the notes and pass on the information to the rest of the people in their state, and to find an elite group of people within your state to prepare and act in unison with the other states as we go forward in order to take control, in order to secure our nation. And it's going to take 30 days to secure our nation. But it'll only do that only if we're organized, if we're focused, and we understand what we have to do. Again, if everybody's going off on their harebrained ideas, look at, I am hearing of places where we have state coordinators who do not come to the Monday night meetings. They have no clue what we're doing. What's that all about? We don't need those people. Because they're going off and they're going to fail. The reason why they're going to fail is because every group that's come before us trying to do this has failed. And the reason why they failed is because they didn't do their homework and they didn't do the research. We're telling you that here at NLA, we have done our homework. We have done the research. We know basically the path to get to power. I mean, it's tweaked this way or that way because really God's in charge here. And sometimes we're not sure when we're going to do what. But at the right timing, it happens. We know what we got to do. We know the process. We know the procedure. We know where to put the pressure on. And one of these things, what we just did with the judges, this is the big thing. We've known we're going to have to do this for a long time, but we didn't speak about it because it wasn't time to speak about it. Now it's time. The cat's out of the bag. Every judge in the United States, as of today, worst case tomorrow, maybe some, you know, all the way on the West Coast, I'm sure 2 days mail. We went it out. Let's see. We sent it out Monday, so it traveled on Monday. It traveled on Tuesday. Yeah, they got it. Wednesday. They should have it today. Worst case, tomorrow morning. But today's Thursday, so they should have it. Which means the phones are buzzing. Which means they know we're here now. If they didn't know we were here before, they know we're here now, and they have to make a decision on what they're going to do. We put in right on the, in big red letters, copied United States Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia. And so their boss has been copied. Their boss is watching. They know their boss is watching. They got to do the right thing. And so anybody who wants to take on this position, you know, this is not an egotistical position. This is a serious position. We're not interested in people with egos. We're not interested in people who have ideas of going down the fiction side of the ground. You know, putting liens on judges. That's not what we're doing. We're here to bring law and order. And so, anybody who wants to get real serious, give me a call at 845-233-6560. That's 845-233-6560. And you can call me tonight after this program, or you can call me tomorrow evening, because during the day it's hard to get me, although I may be paying attention to my phones. You could try once. If you don't get through, then, you know, just give me a call in the evening. But we're going to announce this again on Monday and make the point clear that we need leaders, good leadership. We have a lot of state coordinators. But some of them aren't paying attention. Some of them got some strange ideas. Some of them, you know, they got strange ideas of what the state coordinators is all about. But some of them are good, and they're going to hear this message, and I'm sure they'll be some of the ones that will respond to this call and say, yeah, I'm committed, and we're going to be there at the next meeting. And we're going to start to have private meetings, and only 50 people are coming into that meeting, one person for each state. And then those 50 people need to take the message down to their states. They need to get meetings with all of the leaders in their states, and they need to find out who the serious people are. Serious people only apply. And even if it's a small group, it'll build. You only need a small group in the beginning because we can take control of the entire state with a small group of people. We just need small groups of people in each state to do it. That's all we need. So this is extremely important, and we have to be prepared. Now's the time to get prepared. So let's do it. And anybody who wants to really work with us on that, Let's do that. Okay, with that, we're just going to open up the mics. I'm going to try what we did last time, is just kind of open up. I'm going to mute everybody. Now, we'll just have conversation. It's worked out pretty good over the past few weeks where we didn't have 1,000 people talking and one person came in at a time and we were polite to each other and kind of took some turns. And let's not take too much time so we can let another person speak and so on. But whoever wants to start off, just hit star 6 and you'll be unmuted.
Hello, John?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that... I appreciate those words, you know, for the for your presentation, and also I'd like to thank you for this Thursday night format, because when you answer a question for one individual, with all the people you have on the call, you'd be helping them also. One thing I'd like to ask you is, in reference to, you know, the prevalence of, you know, all these foreclosures and things that are happening in that nature, where people, when they do eventually lose the house, as far as their protections, you know, from the new owners, sometimes it's the bank, and sometimes it's the successful bidder. Now, my question is, the way the laws are set now, people are pretty much protected, except for just one small exception. So what I was wondering, under common law, what protections do, say, tenants in possession or former owners have, you know, under that format of the common law?
Well, property is the key point to liberty. I mean, it's all about property. The first piece of property you own is your body. It's all about property. And anything that extends from your body that you have accumulated, that's your property. And that's what common law is all about, is the protection of that property. Liberty stems out from that, of course. Now, as far as the mortgages and the loans that people have, generally speaking, you know, came through, you know, Freddie Mac or there's a couple of different names of these different ways that they've brought loans out, and it came, really what happened is when you signed off for a loan, when a bank made a loan and worked out with you, they call it a loan. It's really not a loan, but they call it a loan, and they create the paperwork, and you sign the paper, and people think that it's a contract. It's not a contract. It's a release of your CESQ funds. Anybody who doesn't understand what the CESQ funds are, I'm not going to get into that conversation, but just put it on the internet or talk to other people and they'll explain what that's about. But generally speaking, just to give a quick rundown, is when you were born, everybody was given a value, and you became sort of a piece of a merchandise, at least from their perspective. And I think I heard that, you know, it's about $1 million per person. And that came out with some kind of an agreement back, I think, in the 1930s or something, that was required in order to really do what they did with the money, because it was really, it's on the people's backs. It's their money. It's their gold. It was their property. And so there was some kind of an agreement made, something like that, that permitted that. But in any event, as strange as it may sound, because it did sound strange to me, it still does sound strange, but it is what it is. When you go and you took that loan, you got really a release of your funds from your CESQ account. 72 hours after those papers were signed, okay, the bank went over to the Fed window and took out that money and paid forth the money, which is really debt anyway, but they passed that debt out, or that money, that dollars, and everybody got paid. It's done. The bank was paid because, you know, you have to have your closing fees and you have to have all these different fees. The bank gets a fee. You know, the person who did the broker gets a fee. The real estate agents, if they're involved in a property exchange, they get a fee. And the lawyers get their piece of action. All that money took place. That was done right at the closing. They always require that kind of cash stuff up front. And that note then sat for 72 hours because you had the ability to, you know, renege on that and change your mind in 72 hours. Once the 72 hours passed, that was it. They took it and went to the window. They got paid. But then they did a sneaky thing. They sent you a bill, and you paid it. And you keep paying it, and you keep paying it. That's fraud. It's robbery. They defrauded you. And when you go into a courtroom and you reveal that fraud in the courtroom, they'll run like the devil. At least that's been the experience we've been hearing. I haven't personally done it, but I've heard of a lot of people who've done it, and it's worked out well. If you notice, a lot of times when the banks will foreclose, they often don't send the sheriffs out. They'll try to sell the house. They'll get someone to start brokering the house, but they really don't send the sheriff out to kick people out. I'm sure in some cases they have, but generally speaking, I heard they haven't. And some people have put up signs on their homes, you know, saying, hey, you know, I heard about this recently by somebody I just met with. They put a sign up, don't buy this house because you're only going to get tied up in a legal situation because we're not giving it up. But they haven't been kicked out. The sheriff hasn't come. And I think they're kind of nervous about that because they know that the homeowner knows something about it. But the bottom line, that's the truth here about this mortgage. So if you make your argument there and bring it up to the fact that they've already been paid off of this loan, number one, that there is no contract, produce the contract. They can't produce a contract because there is no contract. So no contract, they have no court case. Also, usually the people who are chasing you down, I've already packaged that and, you know, sold it off to a group of lawyers here or a group of investors there, and it ended up with another bank here and, you know, just went all over the place. They don't even know who made the original loans on these things, but the original contractor, the original people who put the agreement together for release of your funds, they're just gone, okay? Now, the real big fraud came about when they bailed out the banks with the, I don't remember how many, what was it, trillions of dollars or billions, I forget, but it was huge amounts of money. They bailed out the banks, okay, which didn't need bailing at all. It was just another way to burn the people, to make a bigger robbery, because they've already been paid on all those loans. And then not only do they get paid that money, they still kick you out of your house, and most people leave because they think they have to. Yeah. And,
well, yeah,
and it's
of
more
the,
fraud.
Of, yes, you're speaking of the $750 billion bailout. That was the first initial bailout. And, of course, you make a good point about the sign. That's interesting. I never seen that, where someone could put a sign and then this way it could deter.
Right next to the for sale sign. I had someone come over to my house the other day. We were talking about some stuff, and that's what they did. They put a sign right next to the for sale sign. You don't want to buy this house because it's stuck in court and you're going to be there. You're not getting it.
No, that's an excellent point. Now, one thing, because, you know, I represent really a lot of people with problems, and that's why they're sort of funneling through me. So some people are beyond that situation where for one reason or another that they're just trying to get, you know, because they miss that. They miss the boat that as far as being able to save their house, or that could be another venue. But basically, what the common law would do as far as the protections just in a normal situation when you are a tenant or what is known as tenant in possession. And as you know, the laws they have now, you know, clearly protect a tenant. You know, you cannot do anything without a court order. So what I was wondering with the common law, what is in the common law that typically protects a tenant in possession, even under a normal circumstance where even it's a lapse in lease or non-payment or anything in that?
When you're talking about a tenant, are you talking about the owner?
Yeah, it could be an owner that now have lost their home because now they the title transferred and things like that. And now
are they
just
still in their
to,
home? Are they
right,
still in their home?
And would still be
wait,
in
whoa,
their
whoa.
Home.
Are they still in their home?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's their home then. If they haven't lost it yet, they haven't lost it. The rest is fraud. It's irrelevant.
Right.
Go to court. Sue them. Sue them. Look at it. If they took it to court already to take it away, that whole thing was a fraud. They produced no contract. They had no sworn affidavit. They took it to a court that was not a court of record. Right there, case closed. Okay, just on that. That means the judge and the lawyers all conspired to steal your home. That's what they did on behalf of the banks. And remember, you know, when anybody that got a loan out and they went to Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae, and I think there's another one. They got a couple of different more names, I think. But whatever they are, that means they went to the Fed window. Well, if the Fed thinks we owe money, come and get it. And believe me, they're not coming to get it because they took it out of our SESQ accounts. Okay, the banks don't have they have nothing in that. When they collect that money, they don't send it to the Fed. Of course, the Fed gets their piece through taxes and all that other stuff. You know, there's a lot of money to be made for everybody. That's the big fraud. And we're all a bunch of suckers paying that money.
Right, right. But what I'm saying, in some cases where it's really the house has already... I understand your question.
It's fraud. If you're still in the house, stand your grounds, and it's fraud.
Right.
They don't own nothing. They got stuff. You better go talk to the people that you paid the money to if you think you own it. And usually the sales will go to groups or investment groups, I presume. I don't know. But all that's just fraud. It doesn't matter. Go get your money from the people who defrauded you. Don't come to me.
Right. And you can see there's a vast variety of reasons why someone would be in that situation. I'll give you an example. To show you it's not just about the mortgages, if somebody's losing the house for taxes, just say local city taxes, and now they just want a graceful way of exiting the house where they're not forced out without a court order. You see, because on some of these people, they're beyond help, possibly. Like I said, obviously, I know you're very creative in that way.
If they're in the house, they're not beyond the point.
Even on a local city tax?
Go file an action in court right now. Look, the problem is people don't know how to file the action, and that's what NLA has been telling everybody for a long time. Let's get educated. Go out to our common law page, just start get educated. Go up to our court access course that's free. Just take it. It's books and stuff. Lays out the anatomy of writing a court case and how all this stuff works. From the perspective of the courts and from perspective of how the lawyers do things. But then apply the common law to that and take control, okay?
Sure.
Now, that takes time, and it takes a little education. You could do it in 3 to 6 months. You can really push hard and get it done if you're that kind of person that can really drive yourself, and you can become good at it.
So that would be then you would open up a common law court.
You go open up a court of record. The courts are right there, are common law already. First of all, remember, you've been defrauded, and you've been defrauded by a judge and a lawyer. And in your defrauding, they've taken you and carried you away into a foreign court, and they took your property without due process. All of that are violations of the Constitution. You have unalienable rights protected by the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights. And so now that makes it a federal offense. So you file your papers under the number in that court case that they used against you, calling it for fraud on a court, okay? And you sue them all, and then you bring it over into the federal courts, and you bring it before the judge. But you want to do all the action inside the court that they used first and immediately move it so they can't respond to it. And you want to do all the action there because you want to make it clear when you go to the judge in the federal court, he sees that you sued, you went right after this judge and that lawyer for conspiracy against you to violate your unalienable rights, right of due process. They've carried you away into a foreign court. You've identified the whole situation, which is exactly what the federal judge is going to try to do to you, too. He's going to do the same thing, okay? But you just notified him, I'm going to sue you, too, by showing him what you've done here. And then you put all the right language into the court case. You accept all the oaths and the bonds of all the officers of this court, which includes that judge, okay? And if they're silent and they don't have a bond or they don't have an oath, then that's fraud again. They have a duty to speak to say, oh, excuse me, I don't have a bond. If they don't say that and they don't have a bond, that's more charges against them. So... look at you. Got to put the fear into their flesh. And look at they don't want any of this stuff on record. This is why what we're doing right now is so powerful. Anybody who's been in the courtrooms, they know what they fear. Just think about what they fear. They fear the record. They have control of the record, okay? And in that control of the record, okay, they're able to expunge things. They pull things out over time. They erase the audio tape. They change the stenographer tape.
Yeah.
And they change everything to clean it up so that they're not liable. Why are they doing that? Because they're still in a situation or a time whereas that they can be held accountable. Okay, and they feel pretty cocky, they feel pretty safe, and they do what they want. But when they bump up to someone, hang on a minute, there's people with their mics open, and I'm getting feedback. During this time when the people when they're feeling pretty cocky, now when they see that someone's coming up, and it's a no nonsense kind of person, kind of understands what's going on, they'll even try to test you a little bit. And as long as you get past that and you don't let them steamroll you, they see that you put their flesh on the line and they want out. They want out. They want you out of their court. And they want you out of your court quick. And they're going to tell the other side, deal with them. Make a deal.
Understood. Now, I appreciate that very much. I'll definitely relay that. And those words that you just said about how they change things around with the record, it's more true than you could ever imagine. So anybody in this call that just heard what he said, that is just so much on point.
And with that in mind, just think of what we just did. We told the truth without pulling any punches. Exactly what's going on in the courts today. We laid it in all 90 district courts at the same time we filed them in 90 district courts across America. And the appellate courts, and we copied every judge, and we also copied, Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia, okay? Just think about how powerful that is. They can't expunge that, okay? They can't possibly do it. They're on the spot. They're exposed. They're naked before us. They know it. You see, this is the pressure we're talking about. A lot of people may not understand what we're talking about because they're not familiar with how things work. But if you can get this point, you'll understand that the position we're in is powerful. And we have other things that are coming right behind us. It's going to hit them, continue to hit them and hit them and hit them and hit them. And you're going to see the pressure building and building and building and building. They can't hide this stuff. They're being exposed for what it is. And the only way that they're going to be able to beat this out, the only way is if we've reached that point of no return where it's just a closed fist on ultimately the communist fist is closed. And I don't believe it has closed yet.
Yeah, with that being said, John, I wanted to say that I appreciate the new message you put out on the front page. It says message to law enforcement, and that's a nice read for people to better understand what National Liberty Alliance is about. So I know you just put that up recently, so thank you for putting that up, and maybe you could talk a little bit about that to the callers, where they could get that and print it out and save it and so forth, because that's in addition to your mission statement and the preface. This is another nice bit of information, and you could actually fit it on about 3 pages, so it's a nice read for someone. Well, anyway, thank you. I'll let you get to the other callers, John.
Okay, appreciate that. Yeah, we also put up on our front page, on the top right, I was thinking of putting this on a blinking, system, get something blinking on there to really make people pay attention, but I think it's enough. It's on the top right side, how to address the FBI and message to law enforcement.
Yeah.
once we were at 81% of our goal of $14,000, and once we reach that 100%, that whole block will fall away, and those two things will probably go right on top. And then right underneath that, we also posted, I think it was yesterday or maybe today, 50 states constituted, 3,134 counties. So that is a major feat. We've accomplished that in 1 year and 4 months. I think that's amazing. That tells us how powerful the NLA message is, and people are getting it. So we're there. We've got to the point where we can say we've arrived, and they can't say nothing against us, and they know they can't. And we're not going to let them. We're not going to let them get away with anything. Matter of fact, they're too frightened to speak. Okay? They're too frightened to speak. And that's okay. Silence just makes them more and more guilty. So, all right, anybody else?
Somebody was asking on a call yesterday whether it's okay for other county jurors come to one particular county or state jurors come from near states.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Say that again.
Can the jurors come from other counties or from even other states?
Oh, from other counties?
Case.
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. All right,
hello.
Anybody else, anything?
Yes. John, can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Can you hear
me? I can hear you.
Okay. Leia from California. I have a question regarding the corruption in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I'm not sure if you are familiar with that.
Well, I'm familiar with corruption everywhere, so.
Okay. My to make a long story short, my ex-husband works for the department. 4 years ago, his father worked for the department as well, and we started going through a divorce. It took approximately 4.5 years, and I settled. I wasn't fighting for anything. I kept trying to walk away. He left. I didn't want to deal with it. Well, now that it's coming time for the settlement, the money settlement part of it to come through, he's using his position in the department to harass me. I have in place a 5-year restraining order against him that I won in 2010. Now he's coming at me stating that I've been stalking him and making death threats on Facebook. And let me just really explain real quick, the death threat that I supposedly made on Facebook was I posted the Betty Broadwick story and said, she got it wrong, the best revenge is success. Well, they took that to court in L.A. County, where he's very familiar because he's familiar with all the judges because he does all their security access, as well as all their special events. So he's very familiar with everybody, all aspects of law enforcement. He's very familiar with them, and they're very familiar with him. My question is, how do you go about, who do you bring it to the attention of when you're being harassed? He's using detectives to call my family and friends to find out where I'm at. I'm not in California. I don't want to say where I'm at. He's literally brought charges against me saying that I've done these things, but I haven't. And then this last weekend, his attorney called my attorney stating that I was outside of their house and watching them for hours, and they had to call the Walnut Sheriff's Department, which happens to be the same facility that my ex-husband works out of. To make a long story short, they called them to the house instead of the local West Covina Police Department. So they're using the law enforcement that's familiar with them and that they have ties with to come after me and harass me and build their reports against me the way they want it to come out. My question is how do I go about bringing this to light, and who do I talk to get him to stop? Because apparently a restraining order is worthless.
Okay, yeah, you have a... It's a serious problem if law enforcement is involved in this. They don't know exactly where you're at right now?
If you punch in where I'm at, it will take you 60 miles away. I'm so deep in the south. I am hiding.
Okay, so they don't know where you're at. That's your best thing you could do right now until we can get sanity back into the nation. And you're not the only one that has that problem. I know people actually had to leave other states to go to another state in order to just continue life because they were going to be arrested if they stayed in that state. And there's nothing you could do about these problems. Your best bet is to stay out of court. That's the best way to stay out of court. If you get into the court, you're probably going to lose. And in order to really win that court, you really got to know what you're doing to begin with. You better be able to articulate yourself and understand how things work in order to beat it out or win it out. I don't So that's about the only thing you could do until we get Sandy back in. And Sandy back in is bringing justice back into the courts, and that's what we're doing. We're trying to do is bring justice back into the courts. The people need to get active and get into their courts, and that's what we're all about. Other than that, you can't do nothing.
Okay, thank you. I think at least I know I don't have any recourse. Like, there's nobody to talk to. I'm just on my own.
Yeah, there isn't. Yeah, there isn't. You know, again, just stay safe. And if you can totally leave the state, that'll be the best thing for you to do for right now. You go back once everything's reestablished. Just that's the only thing I can suggest. You know, when you're dealing with people in law enforcement, and their buddies are coming out, and they become part of the harassment against you, trying to set you up and bring charges against you, if that's the case, then, you know, how do you defeat that? You know,
yeah.
They got the guns, you don't. And they control the courts. The courts are going to work with the cops, believe me, because they want the cops to work with the courts. The courts will work with the cops. It's a handshake now.
Well, you know what I've done is I've learned his game on how to establish my whereabouts. You got to always have an alibi, period. If you don't, then you're screwing yourself. It just so happened that I slid my card, my credit card, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, which is such a rarity for me. And then miraculously, my attorney tells me today, the case has been dismissed. I sent all my credit card statements and my bank statements to my attorney on Monday. He informed the other side's attorney, we can place her in another state. They kept saying, where's she at? They said, Texas. Well, we want to know her whereabouts in Texas. He said, you don't need to know, and we'll bring her back. They wanted to extradite me, and he said, no, I'll accept all paperwork and all service on her behalf, and I'll have her fly in, and I'll vouch that she's in California and she's with me. And so that's the way they've played it. They've agreed to that stipulation that I turn myself into my attorney.
So it seems that you've already neutralized it somewhat.
I'm working my butt off, but I'm trying to figure out what can I do, John, in the future to keep my butt from getting on fire again.
Common law grand juries is your only look at the only solution is common law grand juries. That's it. Common law juries, period. Common law, period, in the courts. That's the only solution. There is no other solution to America. Everybody's problem can be solved when you bring justice back into the courts, because it doesn't matter what you have or what's going on, ultimately it's solved in the court. And especially when it's a government issue or a law enforcement issue, it's solved in the court. And so that's the only way.
John, a lot of people don't know. There is the appellate court. There is the county court. There is the federal court, common law court. But did you know that there is a sheriff's facility court services that's private, and it's just for sheriff's facilities and their members. So see, they can go in and they can do anything down.
That's administrative, though. It's administrative.
Yeah, they got an
extension. Yeah, go ahead. Hang on 1 second. Rick, go ahead.
The power went out over here. Hold on 1 second. The power went out over here, and I'm going to reconnect this now to the network.
Okay.
Okay.
We should just continue talking then, right?
We're going back live now, and we should be back. Well, I had
I saw you fall away. I figured you'd be back. So
everything went down, so I had to reboot all the equipment, and we should be live now. It says we're streaming, so go ahead.
Okay, great. Where were we now?
We were at the fact that there is the corruption, and that I really don't have any recourse with them except for what I'm doing now. Stay away and get people like you.
Stay away and work on the grand juries, and when the grand juries are empowered, then you can go and you can go back home and get back into your life there if that's what you want to do, and you'll be able to do it. You'll go talk to your grand jury and make sure you're protected. But look, we're gonna come down hard on the law enforcement, and when I say come down hard, I mean we're gonna come down and read the riot act to them. We're not coming out after them for anything, but we gotta make them understand that they took an oath. And we know that they know they don't understand the Constitution. And if they try to claim they do, then we're going to tell us about the third. Tell us about the fifth. Tell us about the fourth. And how does the second? What's up with the guns here? How come we have to have a permit? Tell us about all. Obviously, they don't know nothing. Okay? That's why they're getting away with this, because law enforcement doesn't know anything about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. They have no knowledge whatsoever. And so we're dealing with ignorant people. And that's okay. You know, remember, we were ignorant too. We're awakening, so let's awaken them. So it's a school of hard knocks now. Bone up. We'll show you how to do it. We'll help you. Here's where you go to learn. And if you're not going to do it, look for another job. Because we're going to come out after you, because as soon as you violate someone's unalienable rights ignorantly, we're going to take you out of office.
That's right. And I do.
So
I'm
that's
glad
that simple.
That's the position you are in your building the way you are.
All right. Anybody else out there?
Hey, John, I'm going to say. Hey, I was the one that you muted. My GPS went off. And once you muted me, I couldn't unmute again. I was locked out of the call. But anyways,
Do you need me to give you
no,
back?
No, I hung up and called in again, and then I could unmute.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask you a quick question about the foreclosures and stuff. That's why I unmuted while at the last caller. But I got a friend of mine that's just about to lose his home, and he got his loan through Wells Fargo, and he's still paying Wells Fargo.
Uh-huh.
So does everything that you just said?
It applies to every house loan out there that went through Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae or any of those federal things. Look at, because they went to the bank. The money didn't come from the bank. The bank was just the vehicle of the money. Yeah, they made the whole agreement there, but the money didn't change hands for 72 hours after. And then the bank went down to the Fed window, took out the money, and when they took out the money, they dispersed it accordingly, and they didn't have to pay that money back.
But he got the loan through Wells Fargo, and he's paying through Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo would have gone through Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae?
Right. That's how they usually do a house loan, is they take it out through the Fed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so yeah, it doesn't matter that they're the original. Tell them to produce a contract. They won't bring that in court because it's not a contract.
Right.
It's a release of funds. That's what it is, okay?
Okay,
and,
I'll have them listen to this call, too, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, all right, that's what I wanted to ask.
All right,
Jay.
Hey, John?
Yes.
John?
Yeah, could you give me a quick rundown on why attorneys don't use affidavits?
Hold on, just real quick. After we're done, there's a lady trying to get in here, so let her come. Matter of fact, why don't we take that lady first, and we'll take you next, because she's been trying to get up here. I heard the last three calls. Okay.
Thank you,
who was
John.
That lady trying to get in?
This is Jenny from Maryland. How are you?
How you doing, Jenny?
Fine. I'm trying to find out what is the best way through the common law to handle a garnishment, RS garnishment. I think I heard you mention on a call that you wouldn't. I think that you were dealing with the issue that you took them to court and you took your employer to court.
You took several people to court. Yeah, well, when I had an IRS issue, I took IRS, I took the sheriff, I took the county clerk, I took the banks, I took everybody to court.
I took the
agents, everyone. So it shut everyone down from doing anything to me because they all became part of the court case. So that's what I did. So if they're garnishing your wages, I don't know what they're garnishing your wages for or what went on in the court. I don't know anything about that. If they didn't have a sworn affidavit, then they can't be garnishing your wages. Someone has to make a sworn affidavit. Then you have to have your day in court, and so those things have to happen. The other thing is it's got to be a court of record. If they're coming out after you, it's up to you to ask if you didn't know, but you can always, it should be nevertheless still under the law of the land, because Article 6 of the Constitution says that the law of the land is this Constitution, okay, and any of the laws of the United States made by the authority of this Constitution, that's the law of the land. And there's only two courts, basically, it's equity court and the court of law. And a court of law is a common law procedure. It's court of record. But the equity court is also supposed to be under the law of the land. They can't violate that.
So did I hear you say that before they were to garnish you, they had to bring you to court, and they had to have an affidavit?
Absolutely. You have to have your day in court, and it has to be a court of record.
Okay. Well, of course, you know they don't never do that. Okay.
Anything over $20, you want a jury.
Right. I've heard that before. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right, that's your argument. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. That gentleman I was just talking to before that, who's that?
Yeah. I was asking about the affidavits and why attorneys don't like to use them.
All right.
Could you explain that again?
Well, look at the attorneys like to come into court and they make something look like it's a sworn affidavit, and it's not. It's an affirmation to begin with, but they're a second-hand or a third-hand witness. They're not a true witness to the case. So when they come in and bear witness to the case and say all these things on behalf of their client, it's meaningless. It doesn't mean nothing. It has no weight, no clout. It's not a sworn affidavit. That person was not a witness to the case. It's all hearsay. It's meaningless. You need a sworn affidavit from a viable witness. And so without that, someone saying, I'm the guy, I got burnt, well, this is what happened, and this is what I saw, and this is what I know, this is the contract we had. You need someone to say those things. And they have to do it under a sworn affidavit. And if they don't do it, there's no subject matter jurisdiction in any court, except for courts of chancery.
So basically, an affidavit is a witness to the case.
The Supreme Court has ruled over and over again, a sworn affidavit is prima facie case, period. It makes
right.
a case. Without it, there is no case.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome.
Hi, could I ask a small question?
Only taking big questions today. Just kidding. Go ahead.
Okay, now this one is probably petty compared with the terrible problems other people
is
have.
Is this Pat?
Yes, it's Pat in New York and Connecticut.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I went to a doctor in February of 2013, and I showed my insurance card, which is through a Medicare Advantage plan. And the secretary said, well, they weren't on that particular insurance. And I said, well, this has abundant out-of-network coverage. And she seemed doubtful, so I phoned the company and I said, would this, you know, is there any question that they would cover this? And they said there was no question. I asked the secretary to speak with them to allay her fears. She did. And she said, if they refuse to pay, then I'm responsible. I said, well, okay, but I know they're not going to refuse to pay because, you know, I've already spoken to them, so have you. Well, I kind of lost track of what happened, but what apparently happened after that, or what they admit in two conversations they had with me and someone else happened, is that the secretary proceeded to bill the wrong insurance company, and month by month, she got a letter back saying, we, Medicare, are not the provider. The Medicare Advantage plan that this person is on is the provider, and you need to send the bill to the correct Medicare Advantage plan. And month by month, she got this notice, and month by month, continued to send it to Medicare, which is the wrong provider, 12 times. In May of 2014, I received a bill from them dated January 2014 for $250. Now, I'm supposed to get various free exams. This was also supposed to be one of the free exams I get each year. It was just a checkup. So before I could even research what on earth was going on, because initially I thought it was just a plain ordinary mistake, she had a collection company start to call me. And each time they'd call, I would try to tell them it needs to go to the insurance company, and each time, you know, they don't listen to you. Their job is just to collect a bill. And it would end up with my hanging up in frustration because you couldn't talk to them. Well, finally, one called up 2 days ago, and he said he seemed a little more conversant. So I said, look, I'll tell you what. I said, it's ridiculous because the secretary admits that she deliberately for 12 months sent us to the wrong insurance company, and my insurance company during that period was always ready to pay the full amount that Medicare allows at any time. She just deliberately, through negligence or willfulness or both, did this. And, you know, I mean, whatever the Medicare amount is, it's a very small amount, but I'm happy to pay that amount. And he said, well, he wants the $250 plus something extra, making it $306 and change. And I said, that amount doesn't, you know, is irrelevant because she's enriching herself unfairly through willfully doing this and going to the wrong insurance company.
Okay. Here's what you
now,
do.
Now, what do
okay.
I do with this? Because I just was just trying to get rid of the guy.
Well, it seems that you have a lot of paperwork to prove your points, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what you do is you write up what's called a notice and demand. If you go up onto the website, you go up to Court Access, and you click on that, and you download all the stuff in there, look for notice and demand, okay? And just formulate your notice and demand just like that. And basically what your notice and demand does is it sets the record straight, and on the top, big words, notice and demand. And you're going to tell them everything in your case, and you're going to send it to all parties involved, okay? And in that process of sending it to all parties involved, you're going to give them so many days. Give them 60 days or give them 30 days. It depends on what you want to do. Usually, most people, you could do 30 days, and the government, you do 60 days. But it ends up something like this at the bottom. It says, therefore, I, your name, demand that you, in good faith, do your duty by, number one, correcting your files. Number two, send me, by certified mail, your letter of correction within 60 days. If you do not do as demanded within the allotted time, then by tactic procuration, I will determine for you the facts, your duties, and the damages that you owe me. If you do not perform as demanded, I will take lawful action in personam and in rem to defend against you and persons acting in concert with you, who causes or attempts to cause said injuries to secure my substantive rights and to redeem the damages owed to me. If you fail to satisfy the demand within the allotted time, after having been duly served with this notice and demand, and by tactic proclamation, I, your name, or my nominee, or my assigned, will determine for you the following. Number one, that the aforesaid demand is just. Number two, that a court of record in my case, New York, same as yours in New York, may enforce the demand either ex parte or con parte. That number three, that you and each of you concur and are satisfied with the justness of the demand and the process by which the demand shall be enforced. Final paragraph, please do not contact me, your name, by telephone, in order to avoid any misunderstandings or communications. All communications shall henceforth be on the record, i.e. in writing, and duly served. Please serve all communications and process directly to, give them your name and your address, you date it, and you're out of there. You wait 60 days, and you go down and file a show cause on why a judgment shouldn't be filed against them, okay? So you're using the courts. You're not going to use the UCC stuff. Now, this is done in a UCC format, but if you notice, we concluded it in the court so that the court, you can go down and file, and you can settle this whole thing with a show cause. They have to show cause now why they didn't even answer you. They're going to lose right there just right off the bat. Now, of course, you're going to get a battle, you know, because you got to be prepared, and you might have to end up suing the judge and take him to make a federal issue out and all that other stuff. But anyway, that's the way to do it, and that's how you deal with these people.
All right,
now,
did you say
remember this.
That they will
this,
make a case out of it, and they will try to sue me?
Oh, they can't make a case. You're letting them know that you're going to decide for them. When they will default on this. Okay, you got to read the information on it. They're going to default. You send them a default letter after they default, and then after that, you then go and file a judgment against them through a show cause. Okay, it should be a one-day thing in and out of the court, but courts like to help the commercial side of things, so you may get a little bit of resistance there. But hopefully, by the time we're in, you get this through. We'll be in the courts anyway, and we'll have real courts again. But yeah, this notice and demand information, this letter, this notice and demand example is up on our website, so you can download it. It's under should be under court access, and which would be under the essays tab, essays and in court access. Now and so you just go through this process and again they always default on it. Okay, because they don't know how common law works.
Understand, but what you just read me, the wording that you just spoke, I couldn't take down fast enough. Is that
no? No, you don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to. Two things. Okay, number one, this is a recorded program, so you can download it later and stop and move the recording. Number two, it's already written out for you up on the website. Just go download it. I just read off you what's up on the website.
Okay, but that's in the notice and demand.
It's called the notice and demand. You go to court access, go under essays, click on court access, download everything there, and then look for notice and demand. There'll be instructions. There's the anatomy of, I think there's 8 points to a notice and demand that you have to make sure you cover all 8 points. And then there's an example up there.
Okay. I will do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
John, Jason.
Yes. Jason. Go ahead, Jason.
I have two affidavits for you for my case to come through, and I'm glad that New Jersey is having it's due in court. But where do I send the affidavits? There was a P.O. box, and I can't find it. Where is
no,
it?
No, it's go to the we have a regular address. Go to the donation page all the way down the bottom, and you send it to National Liberty Alliance at that address down there on the bottom.
All right, bottom line, okay, fantastic. Okay, and I did an order. I'm just waiting on my shipment to come in. Did you drop ship from last week?
For which?
I did an order for...
Oh, yeah, I saw yours come through. Yeah, it went out.
Well, when should I be receiving that, by the second?
Well, 5 days. It can take 5 days, could take even 7 days, but generally 3 to 5 days.
Oh, cool.
I'm trying to think when I sent it out. I don't remember when. I think I sent it out at the beginning of the week, so today's probably day four. I don't remember when I sent it out, to be honest. I think it was the beginning of the week.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm so glad that we're moving.
And by the
way,
We're setting up a credit card processor up on a website, so anybody who wants to order these booklets and use a credit card instead of mailing in a check, that's going to be set up. Hopefully the guy's going to set it up tomorrow. But if not tomorrow, after the holiday, maybe Tuesday.
Well, fantastic. That's really, really good. I mean, we're really going to the modern age, or we're really connecting. I really appreciate what we've achieved. I didn't realize it was 14 months, and it's exciting. I mean, I met you up in October with James Rod in New York City, and now we have another one coming up, and I'm glad to see you for a third time. And you are a great leader. John, as much as this is not top-down, there needs to be a point of order, and that's that is the president of the Robert's Rules of Order. So you are the president doing your duty.
Well, yeah,
leading
I
us
hear,
and you're not demonstrative. And
yeah,
you need
I understand.
And
I understand what you're saying, and it is getting to that point where we have to put some rules and some order out there only by necessity, because we have people infiltrating. We have infiltrators coming in from every angle now. And we're gonna get more, because believe me, they don't want us to succeed. So that's why we're going to really kind of lock things down a little bit. We have to get real tight with one leader for each state, and then they got to be careful and watch and make sure things are going good. Look, at this whole system, the way we're setting it up, is only for a short period of time. We're not going to, these 50 people are not going to be leading something or anything. It's just a matter of organizing, preparing, learning, getting the information out, working things out. Our goal is to get into the courts. And once we get the administrators situated in the courts, this whole part of the structure disappears then. It goes away because it can't continue. This is not a top-down organization. But until we get there, obviously we have the plan, and we're laying it out. We have the educational platform here. We have, you know, we're facilitating the communications, the organization, and the education and everything else necessary to get the job done. Once the job is done, then we'll just continue to facilitate education, and we'll be given, you know, information and answer. We'll always be here to answer questions and work through problems. So we'll be in advisors, really, mostly.
Well, again, the continuation of a well-cited information source as a library is very key to perpetuate the leverage to continue the education of the people. Because, again, we're not going to be here, and if you create a system that is perpetual, we'll always have leaders being drawn up through our ranks. And no matter how many counties you have, there's going to be, we can do more and fix ourselves better. Because, again, four sometimes...
Well, what we'll end up is this. This is where we'll end up. This is what it's going to look like at the end. When we get to the point where we get to designing, okay, it'll end up being four administrators, okay, four paid administrators in every county. And those four administrators are responsible to execute honor, justice, and mercy, and make sure a court of record is in that county, in that courthouse, and to make sure that any. Hold on, my dog is whining. She wants out. I'll try to finish this before I walk around. To make sure that everything. She's annoying me. I'll be right back.
Outdone by a dog.
Okay, door was closed. She couldn't get out. Okay, anyway, to make sure that everything is going according to the court of record, to make sure people aren't being violated in that state by their government at any level, and that's what your job is, and that's what all of our jobs are. And then once in a while, we'll have to figure out how often, once we stabilize on a state level, you need to just get together and chat, maybe once a month, I don't know, and maybe something comes up, there'll be one person in that state that will hold the unified seal for that state, and maybe you'll decide to transfer that to another person every year or every 6 months, you know, but it'll be administrator, one of the administrators in one of the counties, they'll hold the seal, and you can move it about, I don't know, however you figure that out. Different states may do it differently, but that seal will be there for the use of the whole as a collective. And same thing on the United States level, okay? That'll be there as a whole for the collective, and but it'll always be by vote, and there won't be a need, really, once we straighten our states out. Obviously, the nation becomes straightened out on every level. Once we straighten our states out, it's done. Okay, so really, it'd be very rare when we have to use a unified United States common law grand jury seal, and it'd probably be pretty rare once your states are straightened out to use the unified state, common law grand jury seal. It'll pretty much be a county thing all the time. But National Liberty Alliance will continue for advising purposes, educational purposes, continual training of people as administrators leave and new administrators come in. All of those things will always be there for our support. And a communication process. We'll continue to have a meeting once a week for the sole purpose of dealing with questions or, you know, how do we do this and how do we do that? And that'll always be there, you know? And that's it.
John, if the draft for your outline for your PR for us?
What's that?
The PR. I last time I spoke to you, they were doing a PR piece so we can follow your lead in our local newspapers, unless you're carrying the entire burden.
You're talking to newspapers now? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean the PR. I mean, like we
public relations. Yeah. You know, bear in mind, right now, the safest thing for any of us is you can't speak to them because you're on an active grand jury at the moment. You can't speak to them. That's safe, okay, number one. You want to know what's going on? Hey, we have a page up here. Gives all the information. They don't need anything more than that. They have the stories up there that they should be running, and they can't quiz us, come after us. So I heard something today. that's something, and I'm not going to be, I'm going to be sort of elusive here to some degree, but someone did something a while back that could have put a lot of people in trouble, and we were very concerned, and we took care of that business immediately. And I heard today, and I don't know if this is a rumor or not, but it did come from a good source, that something happened to that person, that the law was coming out against them, and they were being questioned concerning that issue. And that's how serious it is when we lay out a procedure and a process. It must be followed the way we're doing it. We can't go off to left field and right field and do things on our own. We have to make sure we're within the process, within the procedure, within the law. They're just looking for something for us to do wrong. That's what they're doing. They haven't got anything because we're not doing anything wrong. The FBI doesn't bother us because they know we're not doing anything wrong. What, are you on a fishing expedition? Do you have charges? What's going on? Why are you here? You know, they don't belong here. You can't just come out and investigate because some political figure told them to go out and find some dirt on the people, you know? And we'll call them on that. We will call them on that. So we don't have those problems, at least not now, because we're very careful. Now, I will tell you that there's one state, particularly actually a couple states, that are going out on strange things, and we're about ready to cut off a whole group of people in one state right now because we can't have them do it. They're not even paying attention to what we're doing. They're not even listening. They're not coming to the Monday night meetings. They're not coming to Thursday night meetings. They don't really know what our plan is, and they're making it up, and they're using some of our information and calling themselves the common law grand jury. No, we can't have them participate with us because they're only going to get us in trouble is what they're going to do. We want to cut them off. Go get yourself in trouble if that's what you want to do. So,
Well, education is the key, and being informed, plugged into what your system is being loyal to what you need to know. When these people are going out and being foolish, the only thing, if you follow the system, how can you go wrong? Everything is laid out. And
right.
It's that order that they need to be a part of. If you're in the Monday call, you're going to be on call. I feel sorry for these people who are so stupid that it's really easy to coast or be on the greatest part of the wave. And you're doing
A lot of people, they want to take the commercial stuff in here, and that brings a lot of the fiction stuff, and that's where we get in trouble, you see? We're not here for any of that. We're here to bring law and order back into our courts. That's what we're here for. We're not here to do anything else, okay?
Well, again,
we do that, we've done everything then.
Again, with the issue of the foreclosures and the...
Well, that's an important thing.
Deal.
Foreclosure, the whole thing is a fraud, okay, the whole thing.
Right.
And people need to understand that because they need to save their homes. But, yeah, that's about the only issue we really get involved with, which, you know, really, let me think about this because it really is, it's kind of on the fiction side and it isn't. It's just a matter of fact, though, that that's how the CESQ funds work. Okay, that's a matter of fact, and the whole thing is a fraud. Here's the thing. Why are we giving money to a bank that you don't owe it to?
Mm-hmm. Well, again,
why are we doing that?
It's the placating of the using undercover law and using their presumed responsibilities of creating an authority that is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been placating to. They've been doing placating us that far, and it's real capitalism that we're suffering from, and you don't even need the capitalism that they have it. I mean, what is money if you don't love thy neighbor? Money doesn't mean anything, and that's what we're missing in our legitimizing of our society, that we are lacking the spirit of the best. And if
mm-hmm.
we are spiritual people, how many people are actually failing to be actually spiritual? And that's the face of the movement. Now, I don't hold anything against any man, but I definitely will hold his institution to his authority of his hypocrisy. And that is my threat to my establishment. When I went and said to my city leaders, Hi Hitler, for those who had taken away my right to speak, and I got people ticked, and I felt really good about it because it wasn't out of context. Because if you didn't obey taking my rights, I had 9 issues that are read into the record that they will be charged with, And I don't know if that intimidated him, but I definitely had that piece of paper there when I was going to file it on him. And I felt really damn good that I didn't have to even use it to get them to think, because it upsets me when a majority of the people who participate in a meeting say no, and they go yes. And those people are out there in their city halls and saying no, and your administrations say yes. Well, they're in violation of their oath. I mean, how many abatements have I seen go through in my city that shouldn't be there? And in over 10 years.
Well, look, just think about it. You know, we bring justice back into the courts. Now you go to their meetings, and you ask them a question, and they have to answer. Why do they have to answer? Because they're an elected official, they're an appointed official, and they have a duty to answer. And if they don't answer, well, that's fraud. And what is fraud? That's against the law. It's a wrongdoing. Now they're going to be removed from office, or they're going to apologize and answer. And that's the power of the administration of the grand jury. Because remember, we will be the investigative body for the grand jury, and we will investigate those things when we get the call. And we don't have to bring them to court. We don't have to indict them. We just have to read them the Riot Act and give them the prescription, and they're going to obey because they're not going to want to go to jail.
Yeah, right, and you give them the opportunity to bow out gracefully, and we are not
interested
in the victimization of these people. We want them to serve well, right?
Right.
That's what we want. And only as we ask our civil servants to go from the uncivil disservants to become the true civil servants and active participants to serve us to the best of their ability.
We started going to our city council meetings, and they passed a rule that if you wanted to speak, you had to submit it in writing a week before the meeting.
Well, that's not going to hold up in the real world when we get in charge, right, Jay?
Well,
I hope not.
I've always called. One thing I got to say about Jersey City, New Jersey, Hudson County, most corrupt county in New Jersey, and I'll get the credit for that. They have Hague, and from that point is that we are all bound in this stupidity that's squeezing us. And we will seek our answer, and we are doing a fine job. Thank you, John. As much as you think you're not, you're a great leader, and you have done well, and I am glad that I have met you. I've gotten my state in number 5, and I want to take back. I think one of the court cases that I didn't send in yet, my foreclosure of my house, not foreclosure, I had a foreclosure on my house years ago in 2010, that they put $15,000 on the end of my loan so they wouldn't sell my house. Why do they need to do the 15 plus the 3? I spent $18,000 saving my house. I'll be writing that up to you. But again, when I get
the And the shame of the whole thing is you didn't owe him a dime.
Right, and that is a shame, because I mean, even my mother didn't owe many things, so they owe my mother all the money they put out on that, and that's 30-year mortgage right there, and all the years my mother lived, God bless her, she lived she's been passed for going on 9 years, but she lived to 92, and she outlived her Social Security by 32 years, and God bless her.
All right, well, I appreciate the call.
John?
Yeah,
thank you.
Jason, before you hang up, I was hoping to catch Jason before he hung up.
How you doing, Lydia?
Thank you so much for I'm dovetailing here. And the reason why I'm dovetailing is because I spent the last 2 weeks or so developing the hard evidence that you asked for. And what you asked for was, can you show that local authorities are blocking your access to the statutory grand jury? So in Jersey City, where crimes against me were committed, I called the appropriate authorities in the city, and I said, can you please give me the contact information for the foreperson of the Hudson County Grand Jury, which is where Jason Berg lives in Jersey City. And so far I've gotten a runaround. But what I did was, in less than half an hour, organized up 4 to 5 tape-recorded conversations that I'm going to put up on the Internet, which demonstrate irrefutably that a citizen who is a crime victim cannot, is being blocked from communicating with her statutory grand jury, thereby giving Jason the hard, irrefutable evidence that he needs and that you are asking for, that says that we can demonstrate that there is a need for the common law grand jury, because the statutory grand jury is so controlled and so hidden, you can't even communicate with them.
Well, absolutely. And if you can take all of that you've done and put it into an affidavit and get it to us, then we can use that.
Well, you will have that, and you will also have, as I told Jason Berg, and I wish he didn't have hung up, is I'm going to put
it
up
on the
Internet.
He's still on. He's still on.
I'm going to put it up on the Internet so that you can use it and refer to it. I'm going to try to get this done either before or after my TV show tomorrow, and then I'm going to try to refer to it. If I can't get it done until after the show, then I'll refer to it next week on my live show.
Hey, you guys should do another show with Gerard down there. You should call him down.
He doesn't
well,
have
aren't
to.
You guys going
to
be on the if we're going to be down on the 8th. So if you're going to be down there, right? You're having a meeting in New York City.
Who, me?
Yeah, on the 8th.
Oh, that's right. There is a meeting down in New York City. Is that the 8th? Is that when that meeting is?
Well, that's what I heard it from Gina, my Monmouth County organizer.
Yeah, it is on the 8th in New York.
So on the 8th. Wait, hold on. Is that Pat?
Yes.
All right, you're the one who organized that, right?
Correct.
Okay, why don't you give me a call over the holiday, because I'd like to come down to that and want to make sure we get it out on the message. And make sure we get all of the New York leaders there. I'll personally call them if I have to. They need to be there at that meeting. Where's it going to be? What county?
In Manhattan.
Okay.
In the Union Square area.
All right, give me a call over, tomorrow or something, or whenever over the weekend, and let's talk. You got my cell, right?
Yes.
Yeah, if you don't get me on the 233 number, call
me.
Yeah, if you don't get me on 233, call me on my cell, though, okay? But try me on the 233 number first. I'll keep an eye out for you.
Okay.
Thank you. But here's the thing.
Lydia, before you go, you're going to be at that meeting?
I'll be at the meeting.
Yeah, Lydia, you're going to be here, right?
I'll be there, but here's the thing.
Okay.
You can I'm going to set things up so that people can Skype into my TV show so that
that'd be great.
It's easier.
Yeah, I'm hard on her show also, folks. At MNN.org, which is a fantastic organization, and her program is fantastic. It's at 6 p.m. every Friday. Please join us.
And we stream live over the Internet. Call in, but the good part about it is give me like a week or two, I'm going to set Skype up so you can Skype in, and then if you want to do an image grade or if you just want to, be part of a forum, we can do it that way. So there's always that too. What I wanted to do was you put out a call, John, that said we need hard evidence of people being blocked.
Yes.
So fortunately for me, fortunately for me, my persecution has gone on so long that I can call the grand jury in the Bronx. I can call the grand jury in Manhattan. I can call the grand jury in Brooklyn. I can call the grand jury in Jersey City. And so, I cross state lines, and I can say, okay, I'd like to speak to the foreman of the grand jury about all these crimes that have been executed against me. Watch them all block me. So in the greater metropolitan area, with one victim, I can demonstrate that there is a compelling need to establish common law grand juries. It's all tape recorded. It's all going up on the Internet. And I'll sign affidavits for all of this. So there you go.
And it would be my pleasure to help get the 25 to vindicate your wrongdoing against you, Lydia, here as your servant.
Hi, I'm in Texas. I have a family law question.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've been paying child support for 3 years, and all of a sudden, from April of this year, they stopped the withholding of the child support, just kept taking the medical support. And now, six months later, his attorney is hitting me with a lawsuit where I owe twice the amount of child support, and it has to backdate to April, which makes me owe like $5,000-$6,000 already. So, but at the same time, during the summer, I found out some new information about how he's been hiding income before divorce, etc. And I just submitted that information to State Attorney General's office. However, I've been notified by his attorney's office now that there's a hearing on the increased child support on September 19th. So I'm like between a rock and a hard place as to whether...
What's your name? What's your first name?
Nora.
Nora, do you have a background in the common law at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, do you know how to open a court of record?
Yes, I know, sir.
If there's any place that fears the opening of a court of record, it's in the family court, okay? They fear it because they never see paperwork come into the court, and they freak out. They don't like paperwork in the court. And when you
today
come
I called the court and asked them, is this a court of record? She goes, what? Nobody knew the answer.
Yeah, she doesn't know. What state are you in?
Texas.
Okay. Yeah, go into your constitution and find out. Generally, it should say that that all courts are courts of record or you know, something of that nature. They may even say common law. But, they're courts of record anyway because that's the law of the land. You can go right up to the constitution. That's the law of the land, Article 6. But nevertheless, open up a court of record. File your date. Do not talk in that courtroom. You go in there and say everything's in the paperwork. Anything that has to be said here, I'm listening, and I will respond by paper because the process of a court of record is by paper, and number one. And this whole hearing is unconstitutional. It's not according to the common law. But let me tell you, they do not want that paperwork in there. What they may very well do is throw you out. And that's what you want.
Well, my question was, should I wait for Attorney General's investigation? Should I sort of tell them to wait for Attorney General's investigation, which may take 6 months according to them, or do I just file a claim, like common law claim, and finish the whole thing?
You go in there with opening up a court of record. You write it up. Do you know how to write a court of record?
No, but I can look up.
No, it's not as simple as forums. It's really there is forms you can write. We have examples up on the website under court examples, and you can look at those. And those are the formats. But you want to listen to the tapes. You want to take listen to the Thornton tapes, and that's under common law. Go to the essays, highlight essays. Go to common law, I think that's it. Just click on common law. And once you click on common law, you come all the way down towards the bottom and you'll see Bill Thornton and just start listening to his tapes. Now, you go to the same place under essays, highlight essays, and then highlight common law, and then click on court access. And then when you click on that, you can click on that too to learn how to write. But there's another one in there that's called court examples, case examples. Click on that one, and then there'll be a bunch of examples there, and you can just work off that format. The key thing to opening a court of record is to say, I'm one of the people, your name, one of the people of Texas in this court of record sues. Now, you want to sue them. Okay, that's what you want to do. Remember, they have been operating under a foreign court. It has nothing to do with what you're doing. So whether you're the defendant or not, it doesn't matter. You are now the plaintiff. And don't even go for
what I remember in common court, common law, you first give a notice, but they're not letting me have time to give notices, you know, 21-day notice.
No. You don't give nobody a notice. You go in there and you write it up, and you're now the plaintiff, and they're the defendants. And you let them know that if you have to, you know, at some point you're going to add the judge and you're going to add all the lawyers in there, and you have a whole bunch of defendants over there. But now you're paying child support?
Yes, sir, because they kidnapped my child 3 years ago.
So, go get your children back with a court of record right there in their court. Turn them upside down.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
And sue them right there in that court. Now, they're going to violate you, and they're going to do all kinds of things. You need to be prepared to be able to take that over into the federal court. See, as soon as you have to add that judge in it, you no longer are in that courthouse. You have to go to a federal courthouse because it has to go into the right jurisdiction, which it goes under anything under the Constitution. As soon as they violate your unalienable rights, it becomes a constitutional issue. As soon as it becomes a constitutional issue, it becomes a federal court issue. And you bring your court of record over there.
Okay. Thank you.
Right.
Hi, John, I got a legal question.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay,
hear
my
you.
Name's Mark. I'm in Orlando, Florida. I'm a member of a still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, National Liberty Alliance, and I'm the administrator for the Orange County, Florida, National Liberty Alliance. We reconstituted and I filed with the clerk of courts, so we're moving right along here in Florida. But anyhow, my question is different than particularly with the NLA. What it was is I was arrested and sentenced to 151 days in jail for not being in a free speech zone and 146 days in jail for handing out flyers about jury nullification on the courthouse steps. And when it was all said and done, I ended up being sentenced to 142 days in jail by Judge Belvin Perry of Casey Anthony fame. And what I did was violate his administrative order he issued about you weren't allowed to talk to, hold a sign, or communicate by handing paper to any potential jurors at Orange County Courthouse steps. And I appealed it through the Fifth District of Court of Appeals, and they ruled in my favor about the free speech zone as unconstitutional. But they did uphold Judge Belvin Perry and ruled against me as to the flyer I was handing out saying that Orange County Courthouse is not an open forum, meaning the judge can do anything he wants with that ground there. And I was convicted of contempt of court, external contempt of court, because I was never in the courthouse building. I was on the sidewalk between the parking garage and the courthouse. So the reason for my call is I served the sentence. I was sentenced in March or February of 13, served 104 days, got off for good behavior. But what would be my recourse is back to Judge Belvin Perry because it's plainly unconstitutional.
Right. Was there a sworn affidavit against you in that court?
Yeah, they had a sworn affidavit from a few people just saying I gave them the flyer. That's
right.
All.
Right, but well, that doesn't mean anything anyway. But, Lo, what did it say on the bottom? Did it say sworn statement and signed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was there a notary there?
An affidavit? I believe there was. I don't know. I'd have to go look at it again.
You better go look at that because I tell you what, I haven't seen a court case yet with one. Okay?
Really?
That's how bad they are. Yep. Yeah. So if there's no sworn affidavit, they don't have subject matter. They don't have subject matter jurisdiction. The whole thing was illegal. Number one. Number two, he probably he did act. He acted as a chancery court. So that's not legal in the United States either. So he doesn't have the authority. He violated your unalienable rights. He and the prosecutor conspired against you in order to kidnap you, and that's the idea of the case that you have to run down. And there's a lot of stuff on that. There's your U.S. 42 and U.S. 18. You got numerous codes in there that you can go after them, and they, you know, gives them time in prison and everything for that. And there's fines involved in that. But you're going to sue for damages. You know, you should be able to get $25,000 a day for being in jail. Okay, that's what you want to sue for. I'd sue for at least $25,000 a day. And you're going to require, at least I would, I'd require 5 days for every day I was in there, I want him in there. And that's what you should go out for. That's what I would go out for. And you're going to have to do it in a court of record, and you're going to end up taking it into the federal court because it became a federal issue the moment they hijacked you into another court.
Mm-hmm.
See, the court they hijacked you into was a chancery court. What people have to understand is when you go into a chancery court, and every court in the United States turns up to be a chancery court. I haven't found one that isn't, but that's what it is. And you're dealing with the king, okay? That's what you're dealing with. You're going up against the king. And whatever he says goes, because that's how chancery courts work.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't belong in that court. and you got to let them know that. And you got to, that court is subject to collateral damage from your court, which is a court of record. And that's how you got to go up against them. And again, you know, you can't really do these things unless you have some knowledge. You have to, you know, listen to the tapes, and you have to start studying the tapes. You have to learn the process by looking at the court access that we have up there on the website, and learn how to do these things and be able to go into court and articulate yourself. It sounds like you have some experience, so I don't know how much you have, but if you can go up and work on those things, then you could deal with it and sue them.
Yeah, and I'm also one of the jurors up there in Dixie County. When we filed those two true bills. Yeah, so I'm getting experience on it, but that's my next move.
You've seen, I'm sure, the jurist handbooks, right?
Oh, yeah. Sure, we do that.
Anybody wants the jurist handbooks, on the right-hand side of our website, you'll see we have them available now, so just go up there and order them. We got them down to 68 cents. You have to order a minimum of 100. So $68 for 100 of them, and we'll try to reduce that price as we go, but right now that's what it is. That covers everything, delivery and everything. And we will be taking credit cards on that in the next couple of days, hopefully tomorrow, but if not, right after the holiday. We did work all the paperwork out, just waiting for the access codes now to put, you know, the HTML to put into our website so we can set up the credit cards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, ending this, thanks for your advice, and I really appreciate everything you're doing, and you got a great team down here with Hagen Smith and Roger and a few others. They're just doing,
yep.
Terry Trussell. They're doing great, good leadership. Thank you very much.
Great. Okay, thank you. Okay, anybody else out there?
Yeah, John, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yep, this is Dan from Montana.
How you doing, Dan?
Yep, just checking the...
Hang on one second.
Like our...
Gerard. Gerard, you there? Gerard? All right, I see Gerard. When you get me, when you hear this, come back. Well, go ahead. Go ahead, you go back. Back to you. What are you, Stan? Is that what your name?
Dan.
Stan?
Yep, I chatted with Gerard a couple days ago about our seal.
Uh-huh.
And I've noticed that it hasn't been, you're still looking for it. Is there still a problem, or what do we need to do?
What state?
Montana.
Were you the one that sent an ink seal?
We embossed it, and then they put some ink over it.
Yeah, that probably shouldn't be a problem. You know, you don't need to put ink or anything on it. It's best to leave it the way it is. And then what happens is, you know, if they wanted to copy that and they wanted to show, what they do is they put wax on it. Okay? But let me see. Montana, I'll take a look and I'll see, you know, if we did get Montana. It should have been accepted if it's embossed. You know?
Yep. There was ink on it, so and that's how they have done it in the past in different situations.
Yeah.
Just so you can photocopy it.
All right, I'll take a look for that. I'm kind of looking right now as we're talking, but I'll take a look for it. And I think I got it. Hold on. Oh no, that's Idaho. Idaho put ink on it too. So. Yeah, if you sent it with ink, then it shouldn't be a problem. Did we? Is your name listed still up there as one we didn't get?
Yes.
All right, if you could, just drop it in the mail. Don't send it special or anything. Just put it in an envelope, you know, fold it up in three, put it in an envelope. Just send us another couple, you know, five copies, and just drop it in the regular mail. We'll get it. Just to back
okay,
it up.
The trade wins.
Well, you can now go to National Liberty Alliance. We're set up with that name now. We did a trust, and so do that.
Okay, thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anybody else out there?
Hello.
Yes, hello.
How are you?
Good.
Hey,
John.
I'm calling from Connecticut. I'm under Pat. And we're going to be getting the books and stuff like that this week for our team up here. And I have a question, because I said I'm also having problems with my mortgage and stuff, which they were changing the mortgages and all that, and nothing was ever signed. And then they changed my mortgage when it was in a fixed. They changed it to a variable. And what they're doing in our state, they're taking people's homes over a water bill. They're taxed on our water. And people are losing their homes for as low as $1,000 to $2,000. And it's a nightmare what they're doing because, again, with the laws, the common law, so I am so excited to get the book this week. And I also received a call from, what is it, Wells Fargo. I received a letter stating that they wanted me to pay some bill, and I've never, ever had an account with Wells Fargo. So then they send me a letter in writing stating that more or less the time had passed, and they could not sue me, but they want me to pay so that my credit would not be messed up. And they broke it down in the installments. And so I called them back, and they said, well, before you say anything, this is all going to be recorded. I said, good. I said, do you mind if I record you? And then I asked them, I said, well, first of all, who signed my name? I've never had no account with Wells Fargo. And I said, and this sounds like a threat or an intimidation from your company. I said, you've been calling me, and you've been harassing me about it. I want to speak to Renaissance Service Company or whatever. And I said, I would like to speak to Mr. Renaissance. And she goes, well, and I said, I want your name, and I want to speak to him right now. And she goes, wait a minute. She goes, I don't want you to be on. She goes, she told me to take her off the record. I said, well, you take me off the record, you know. Then she goes, you listen to me. I said, I don't have to listen to you. And then she slammed the phone on me.
Okay, what you want to do is straighten your problem out with a notice and demand. Did you hear the earlier call?
No,
about the notice and demand?
Okay.
Okay, well, on the recording, you know, you can download this later on. It'll be up online, and you can listen to the recording and get the details. But basically, you know, you do what's called a notice and demand, and you put all your issues into the paper, and you let them know that, you know, if they don't respond to this, that you'll decide for them. And by their lack of response to you, they default, because they will default. They'll go talk to their lawyer. They'll say, don't worry about that stuff. And that's good. And so then you can deal with that with a show cause in a court and close it right down and collect whatever it is that you said you're going to collect for your troubles.
You mean I could turn around and put it against them? Because
absolutely. Absolutely.
And this is what I did. I remember when you were, you know, one of the other conferences, I had an issue with the light company and a Bank of America. And I did what you had told, I bought the papers down, I written it up, I brought it down to the courthouse, and I said I would like to speak to Mr. Bank of America. And they did not want to take the paperwork and all that, because they were going to take me to court, put a lien and all that. So I wrote the two letters. I brought it down to the courthouse, and I said, I would like these letters stamped. And they got such an attitude, they wanted to stamp it, but guess what? It worked. It was all thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, again, you got to push back, that's all. You know? And these people, you don't owe nothing to those people. You don't owe them to have to deal
absolutely.
With them. They're annoying you. They're trying to get money out of you. And whatever it is that they're trying to get out of you, that's what you're going to go out after them for. That's what I do. You come out after me for $25,000 or $100,000, and I don't owe it to you, then that's what I'm going to settle with at the end.
And even like with the mortgages, how now the companies, it was with Bank of America, and they kept on changing it to all these financial companies. Then
yeah, they have no paperwork on it. There's nothing there. They have no contract. They'll never produce a contract because the contract would prove fraud on the court. That's why they'll never produce it. And
listen,
it'll
thank you, because that's, I asked them, I said, I never signed no contract with you. So what they did, they whited the old contract out, and they wrote note, N-O-T-E, in large caps.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you owe us this. I said, your name doesn't even appear on here.
Well, that's fraud.
Thank
it's fraud.
You.
And there's no signature. There's no agreement. There's got to have. Look, a contract requires at least two signatures.
Right. Okay.
One of them's got to be yours.
Thank you.
And if your signature's not on it, you have no contract with them. Go away. Leave me alone. And trust
and that's
me, nobody,
our mortgages
nobody,
and stuff too, right?
Nobody with a mortgage has a contract.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you. There is no contract. Okay.
Right. When you bring that up in court, produce the contract, and they keep producing fraudulent paper after fraudulent paper, you just start using that as exhibits. Okay?
Okay.
Fraud on the court, exhibit A.
Wait a minute. No,
you know? So, okay.
Okay, because we're gonna be working. You know, taking the well, we're getting the booklets and everything this week.
Mm-hmm.
This is so
great.
Exciting. I love it. Thank you. And
right.
Keep up the wonderful work. And you said for the donation.
Getting ready to talk on the call.
Yep.
Okay. We can send, a money order into you?
Yeah, anything you want. You know, go up to the donation button, and you can either do a credit card or you could do a check, money order, whatever you want. Down on the bottom, there's an address, and you can make the money order out to National Liberty Alliance.
Okay.
Or whatever. So we
yeah,
appreciate
thank you.
It. Thank
no,
you.
We well, we truly appreciate all the knowledge and everything. Thank you.
Okay,
no
thank you.
Thank you again. Have a good evening.
You too. Hey, Gerard, you out there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, let me. I got a lot of noise out there. Let me just mute everything. Whoever's going to talk next can hit the *6, but whoever's not on the mic, *6 yourself back out so we don't hear any background. Yeah, Gerard, can you take over for just a couple of minutes? I got to go get a bottle of water. And I want to change my ear set, so I'll be 2 to 5 minutes.
Okay, very good.
All right.
Yeah.
Be right back. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Gerard?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, in reference to that woman that was just on, she mentioned about, you know, people losing their homes, you know, for $1,000. Yeah, what that actually is a sewer use tax. And they made that, they passed that about 15 or 20 years ago and made it a foreclosable lien. So someone could lose their house in Connecticut for $1,000 or even less. It could be a $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 house. And they start throwing that paperwork at you, and now you have to pay the bill, the original bill, and now maybe $10,000, $15,000. And lawyer's fee, which people don't even have, and they could lose, theoretically. And it has happened, of course, not just theoretically, but they could then lose their home on an initial suit of $1,000.
Yeah, amazing. You know what else they do? Let's say they come after you have a $400,000 house and you end up, they put it up for auction, however, to foreclose on it. If you only have $200,000 of a mortgage left, and somebody buys the place for $300,000, those proceeds are supposed to go to the owner, and they never do that. The overage above the original lien is supposed to go back to the person, and the county's been keeping that.
Right, that is correct. If for some reason at auction, if it gets over what is owed, right? It's called the proceeds of the sale is then distributed. It's supposed to be distributed back to the owner. Yeah, absolutely.
Now
right.
I'll tell you, you know, they did some fugazi stuff in my county, because what they do is, like, if you get behind on your taxes, as soon as you're X many months behind, what the county does is they set up almost like a private auction, and they buy the house at auction. So now they own the deed. And so then what happens is, when they foreclose on it, they don't have to give the money, because it's like it's already their property. It's a fraud that they're doing. So see, they take control of the deed before they put it up to the public auction. They're buying it somehow at some fugazi auction somewhere, and taking the deed over. They may bid a dollar on it, but there's nobody there but them. You know, they do this, they have this auction set up where it's like just them there, and they take control of the deed, And then if it goes to a tax sale eventually, because they got to give you so much time, you know, to come back. If they get overage, they don't give it to the person because they're considered the owner. They give it to themselves.
Right. In that case, right, because the way they're handling it in that format, they have the ability to do it then, because then they profit from it because they took over the title. Gerard, I was just wondering on there was a woman who has a show, and I guess she comes on now and then. Is there? Could you tell me how to be able to listen to that show?
You're talking about Lydia that was just on with Eminem Studio?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, she's on the local public access TV station down there. I'm not exactly sure, but you won't get it. Where are you from?
Connecticut.
Yeah, you probably won't pick it up. The way you're going to have to listen is she says it's going to be simulcast on the Internet. That would be the way that you would be able to get it. Now, I don't know that she didn't give the information on that. I don't know the information. I don't even know if it's set up yet, but it sounded like to me like she was just going to start simulcasting it on the Internet.
Right.
You know, they reach out through Manhattan and they have like a 800,000 viewership, but it's not that strong of a station. I know like the ones that made the videos with me on it, they've been changing the stations around. They put them on channel 30. That might even be the channel that she's on, but I don't think you'll ever pick it up in Connecticut. We have to find out what the Internet address is on that, and maybe we can...
Gerard, Jason here.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Jason would know.
to get a hold of to see Lydia's my show, you type in MNN.org, and you watch Crooked Doctors, and you can listen to us talk about her cases that are pending and how much she's winning. I'm in one of her lawsuits because yep. the federal court refused to provide us with protection orders.
Well, wants to know about the live dangerous. Show. Is she streaming that live also on the Internet? I thought that's what I heard.
There you go. There's a delay of a couple of seconds, but we're live on Internet.
Okay, so if you put MNN what, .org?
Yeah, Michael neighbor NN.org, and type in Crooked Doctors. It's watched now at 6 p.m. on Fridays.
Well, there you go, everybody.
Okay, excellent. So that, let me just be clear. That's M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, N as in Nancy again, and then .org?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
and,
good.
Crooked
and
Doctors. We watch now. You go click on Watch Now, and it's Crooked Doctors. We're on there. I'm a still guy. I'm in Jersey City, and she's in New Manhattan. So we still get together, and... I what's fantastic about Lydia, the quest that she's been on and the abuse that she's received is coming to an end. And being part of her life since 2013, she's made a remarkable change in our lives. I mean, what she has done with the common law grand jury and got them to talk their BS gives us the ammunition to clear the field for us. And whatever thing as John's done, I mean, the paperwork was proper. I would have gone after the clerks. I would have chopped everyone up. And anyone wants to get in my way, you're dead because you violated your oath. You violated the codes. You have no right to be in your position. You're a violator and repugnant upon your post. If you don't follow your authority given to you properly, then you're being in bad behavior, thus removing them.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that things are coming to a close, and I've heard Lydia through the last different Thursdays, ever since the second Thursday that they had here, and you know, she's got a lot of good points, and she tries to help out, you know, when other people are on, mm-hmm. and tries to inject, you know, her... you know, wisdom on that situation. So it's great. She's come up with a lot of good common sense things. I like what she said tonight about, you know, the people have to come together and mention their stories of how they're not able to access the grand jury. And just, and as long as, of course, Gerard is there, I wanted to ask also that, you know, typically you're supposed to go through the prosecutor, and then through the prosecutor you would then have access, or at least, you know, your case would be known. But if the prosecutor does not want to do anything, you have very little recourse with the present
right.
system.
Right, and that's what's so, so disarming about on civil disservice. I mean, all the people that have lied in her case should have gone to jail. The Yeshiva University should be discombobulated and taken apart as an educational institution. Or their rights to do that need to be pulled. And I'm an educator. And the most important part of being an educator is to be forthright with what you're trying to do as a service. And the Yeshiva University has too long been a disservice to the community and victimizing people and harassing people to the point that if you didn't have if you had a gun, you would go after them and say goodbye to them. But again, that's not the purpose of life, is to kill your enemies.
Right, exactly. We want to, yeah, because then we'd be as bad as them. So that,
right.
that's the great thing about this whole form. But in your experience, I know you're in a different state, but basically if someone had any, you know, criminal complaints about someone, that would typically go through the prosecutor, and pretty much we would never have access to even get to the grand jury. It would all be up to that prosecutor. And think about it, that prosecutor...
He's a roadblock.
Yeah, would be... They could easily be... See, here's the thing. The proof that the system is no good is because there could easily be a conflict of interest between who you want to indict and who the friends are of the prosecutor. It's just completely... You know, I have much better faith in having a group of people that you're presenting your potential case to and let them decide instead of one person.
I don't believe the prosecutor even really has the authority to do that. You should be able to get in front of a grand jury with information no matter what. He's not supposed to be filtering that.
That's right. The prosecutor has nothing to do with that.
That's real fraud, because just like the gentleman said, look, if you're going after government corruption, he's going to use the government employee, the prosecutor. That's not, you know, he's going to filter it for the grand jury. There's no way that the prosecutor should be sitting there filtering what the grand jury gets. You know, you should be able to go into the grand jury and state your case, and if they're interested, then they can do an investigation and they can carry it further. But he's not supposed to be screening it. Listen, even somebody who the prosecutor wants indicted, really, they're supposed to be able to stand in front of that grand jury and
excellent.
Give their private story. What's that?
Yeah, this is actually what you just said. I mean, this is a breakthrough, because I could get together people that have tried to push something through and went through the prosecutor, and they were blocked. And as a matter of fact, they actually then went, tried to go over their head by going actually to the mayor's office and speaking.
Yeah, well,
directly
the mayor
to the
won't do anything.
Right, but just to show you the point that they were blocked to the point that they tried to do whatever they
Listen,
could.
I don't know if there are statutory laws that vary from state to state on that.
Right,
you know,
right.
They probably got some kind of pretend law, but I know in this state here that by law the opposing attorney, the accused attorney, or the accused, they call it a defendant's information pack. And we had a video that took place in Harlem with this black man that served on the grand jury like three or four times, and he was there, and they were doing a show like on Public Access TV, and there was a woman there who was running for a judgeship, and she had some kind of legal background. It was her show, and there was a lady there who was a trial court lawyer for many years. She was, you know, in her 60s, and they had this roundtable discussion And as they're going back and forth, and this guy, whatever his name was, Clyde Boykin or whatever, who had been a grand jury foreman on four different occasions, he said, "Oh, we get the cases and we sit down, we go together." And then he says, "And then we ask if there's any defendant information packets." Well, that trial attorney almost fell off her chair. She says, "I've been a trial attorney for 35 years, and she said, I have never once had a grand jury ask me for a defendant's information packet. She said, I got to force to get that thing in their hands. I have to fight to get it in there. She says, I have never heard of a grand jury foreman asking for them." And he goes, "Oh, that's part of the deal. We're supposed to ask for those." Well, see, what's supposed to happen and what happens is two different things, obviously. We had that tape up, and we were using that to show how dysfunctional this grand jury process is, that you can't, an attorney, a 35-year trial attorney, claims that she has to, like, beat, you know, practically with hammers to get her defendant's information packet into the grand jury, because those prosecutors, they want to indict the ham sandwich, they want a one-sided story, they don't want anybody talking to the grand jury. That's what's going on, and people think that that's the law, and I don't believe it's the law, it's a violation of the law.
Interesting. No, that's a real eye-opener, because that's, you know, like you said, it should not be filtered. Here in Connecticut, you know, the prosecutor seems to be like a god, and of course I have to check what the charter and so forth says. I wish it would be like New York, and we'll have to check on that. But
okay. I didn't know anybody would be like New York, but that's good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good. And, yeah, and... But could you believe that it's the frustration of people that if there's any, you know, it's such a recipe for a conflict and for corruption where one man is making the decision on it. Now, if John's there, I just had one easy question for John, just on clarification. John?
Yeah, go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, there was, you said once that in common law, a corporation can't go ahead into common law, or they cannot sue.
They have to go into an equity court. They can't come into a court of law. Okay. In other words, look at our system is set up with two jurisdictions. One is equity, and one is law, which is common law. Now, bear in mind, the equity court is still under the Constitution. It still has to obey Article 6, which is the law of the land.
Yeah. So basically, it would not. It's an equity court that would still be governed by the Constitution.
It's governed by the Constitution, but you have one jurist in there, just one. And we call him a judge. And then there's an appellate system to that system. With the common law, there is no appeal. Common law, when the jury makes a decision, it's final, period. It cannot be overturned, overruled. It can't be reconsidered, nothing. There's only one situation that would make the United States, and only the United States Supreme Court can reconsider it. That would be the nine justices in Washington. And the only thing that could bring them there is if someone's unalienable rights was injured by that jury.
Right, like a constitutional issue.
Exactly.
Yeah. But
it's more than a constitutional... Let's think about that. They have to be injured. They have to have unalienable rights injured. That's the key. And that is a constitutional issue, but that's you know, focused in on rights.
Yeah, and John, you know, the reason I mentioned about the corporation is because, you know, people think of corporations, of course, of being large, but some corporations just are like almost regular people, and they just have, you know, just a way of doing business, and there's very few people that even work it. And then, of course, you know, they're injured like everyone else, you know, and I just wanted to see, you know, because these are just questions that people have. You know, what their course was, and when you did, I remember you mentioned it like within the last 2 weeks, and it stuck in my mind that I wanted to ask you about it. So they would, what you said, the Court of Equity, and you said it would be one jurist, which is actually a judge. So in that case, but could the corporation request any type of jury in that particular? They
no.
Can't. Okay. So that would
no,
be,
because they're not people. They're not flesh and blood.
Right.
Okay. So
okay.
They have to go into the court of equity. But there's nothing wrong with the court of equity. Look, if we have honest courts, we have honest judges. Well, if we have honest courts, we'll have honest judges. That's the key.
Right.
That's why the people have got to be there to bring them to be just.
Right.
Now, once the system is going right and they're not working for the enemy anymore, you know, not working for the powers that be, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
they're not working for the corporations. Now they're gonna deal with the cases correctly, because as soon as the administrators for the grand jury hear that a judge has ruled in an opposite way, which is contrary to the law of the land,
right.
He's in bad behavior now.
Right.
And we're going to pull him onto the carpet. And he better go fix that case up real quick. We'll take it from there, you know?
Right, right. And he runs risks on doing that because it's so obvious. Yeah, just to close this out, let me ask you this one thing then. So let's say, you know, they want to do that, but let's just say that the corporation wants to bring it forward themselves, in other words, without a lawyer, that they have the skill and the experience to bring it forward themselves. Because, you know, either lawyers are too busy, they don't want to be bothered, and you want to just bring it forward yourself. Now, is that possible?
In other words, because in the courts today, in order to represent a corporation, you have to be a lawyer. Is that what
right,
you're asking?
Very good. See, you're on point.
Okay.
So I was just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. That's a good question. I'm not sure I can answer that completely. I'd have to give that some thought and maybe
okay.
look some things up. But here's the key
yeah.
to that. If there is only one person who owns that corporation, well, absolutely, they can represent themselves. But you see, if there's more than one person, they would have to get the permission or the agreement with the other people. And I guess that would be the answer, really. If they can get all the people that are owners of that corporation to agree to that one person representing them, there you go. You know, first of all, there's no license. They can't require a bar attorney. Anybody can be their own attorney, you know. But remember, once you have a corporation with partners in it, now you have a situation where majority has to rule and agree on what they're going to do
right.
in court.
Right. I got you. Well, listen, John, I appreciate that you picked up on that instantly, what I mentioned about the representing, because you're so schooled on the law. You know that presently they frown upon an individual representing even the simplest LLC. They say, oh, no, you need a lawyer.
Right, right. Yeah, I had a case in court once where the other side was arguing and objecting to me representing myself because, you know, and I said, well, I'm not a corporation, I'm a DBA. And he still didn't understand that, didn't agree. And
right.
And the judge asked me, he says, you know, well, you know, you're a DBA? Yeah, I said, I'm a DBA. I'm not a corporation. And he wasn't sure. He didn't know. He had to get back to me on that to check in to see if I could represent myself as a DBA, doing business as what, you know, it's just a registered
yeah.
with the county. You know, hey, I'm doing business as a different name, but I'm me. I'm a person. I'm a people. I got blood, flesh and blood. So, of course, he did come back and permitted me to do that because he found out that I could. You know, but and I'd like to digress back to the beginning of our show or our program where it came up with this idea of the perfect union. And when I had taken a break, got some water, and I was listening in, and I was looking up some things, and I recalled, and I don't know if I brought this up, I recalled the conversation that Gerard and I was having right before the show. And there was a guy, Bruno, and I know I brought him up earlier, but I don't know whether I brought this point up. Bruno, in the Anti-Federalist Papers, he was making the argument that the meaning of the more perfect union had nothing to do with the perfect union of the states, but the perfect union of the people. And maybe that is what they meant when they said a more perfect union, meaning that, okay, they were bringing the 13 colonies together, and they were bringing them together as a union, giving the states certain rights above the federal. You know, and they wrote out the criteria of what, and there are 18 or 19 powers in Article 1 that Congress has, and of course the court is to exercise and execute those powers in law, and anything outside of that belongs to the state. And they were bringing the state to a union. They were coming to agreements on this, and they were bringing the states to a union. And but the actual meaning of the phrase in the preamble, a more perfect union, was really focusing in on the people. And maybe that's why they said a more perfect union is not a union of the states, but a union of the people, wherein I'm living in one state and I can go to another state and live there. That might be the reason of why they use that phrase. But it is kind of strange, more perfect, because there isn't something more perfect. Well, it would be in that case. You got a perfect union of states. Well, we got a more perfect one than that. And I guess that kind of works. I don't know. I have to think about the actual wording, if that was the proper wording. But I think that's what they meant. This guy Bruno in Anti-Federalist Papers, most impressive one that I've heard so far, as far as speakers in that, Anti-Federalist Papers. And by the way, a lot of people misunderstand that Anti-Federalist Papers, and as a matter of fact, they even speak about that in the papers, is that they're not against the Federalist system. They were against the Federalists, the people who called themselves Federalists that started this whole process and seized control on it quickly in order to create a demise in the beginning. And so they became anti-Federalists. Not that they were against the federal government, they were definitely for one, but they wanted to make sure that it was honest and it wasn't hijacked. And that's what they were saying, was being hijacked, and they prevented it from being hijacked. But there were people also in the Federalist that had joined up with that and, of course, ended up bringing the right things together. But it was a lot of the anti-Federalists that forced that into that system to make sure we all understood what was really going on. And it was because of them, I think, that they removed anything with the jury, ultimately. I mean, there is mention of a jury in the body of the Constitution, but as far as the grand jury, it's only in the Bill of Rights. The other thing it was the anti-federalists that pushed hard that there must be a Bill of Rights. There must be a Bill of Rights. And it's the Bill of Rights that cleans this whole thing up, because that prevents anybody to misinterpret the meaning of the Constitution in any way that would violate our unalienable rights. Now, of course, they've dumbed us down, and we don't even know about what these things say. That's why they do violate our rights, and we don't even know it. Those of us who are waking up, of course, we're realizing it, and we need to wake other people up. But anyway, that may be the meaning. Just wanted to pipe that in.
Hey,
okay.
John.
Yeah.
Hey, John. This is Tanner from Oklahoma. How are you doing?
Hey, Tanner.
Hey, I just had a quick question. I'm trying to work on this action on the boilerplate, and I got a beginner question here. It says I put my county court of Oklahoma on the top. It says the people of the state of Oklahoma, complainers v. Tanner. And so I'm
going
to
have to speak up a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm trying to fill out the action.
Yeah.
And it says I put my county court at the top. I'm the one that has the custody battle and the criminal case at the same time, doing weekend jails, all that. So it says the people of the state of Oklahoma, complainers v, and then my name. Do I leave all that in on my action? So I'm going to take it to federal court.
I'm not sure. Say that again. I'm not sure I understood what you were saying. Do you leave what in?
On the action boilerplate at the very top, it says Canadian
okay.
County Court, Oklahoma, and then in that box it says the people of the state of Oklahoma, a fictitious foreign corporate created entity.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you have to work that out. If you're going in with a situation where they're coming out against you as the people, then that's a fictitious corporation. They have nothing to do with you. You don't even belong in that court. You see, when you go in, you know, you don't go in and do a counter complaint. You don't do that. First of all, we don't do complaints. We do actions. And they have a complaint in a court that has nothing to do with you. So when you open up your court, you're automatically the plaintiff. And they become the defendants, and that's a fictitious corporation used to hide fraud. And that's why we put it in there. But again, if that applies to your case, then you use it. If not, then you don't use it.
Yeah, because I'm in criminal court on this matter. But I just needed to file the right thing. I thought the action was what you were saying to file to put into the county court so that I can actually add the other part on top to take it to the federal court.
Right. You always want to finish up and clean things up in your court, do your collateral attack there, and then move it over to the feds.
Okay.
Where's that paper that moves it over to the federal court?
We do have one on one of our papers. If you go up to the news, breaking news, I should throw one up there. If I get time, I'll do that. But right now, I just don't have the time. But there is one up on our breaking news. If you come down and you look for where we moved from the state into the federal court, you know, that's back about 4 or 5 months ago. I don't remember. It's about 3 or 4 months ago or something. When you look for that paper and you open it up, you'll see a one-pager that goes on top of it. And you could pretty much duplicate that and just change it over from the grand jury to the people, you know, that you're one of the people and, you know, your name and stuff on it. And it's just a one-pager to move it over to federal court. Nothing.
What's it under?
Go under news, breaking news, or news. Just click on news.
Okay.
And it's back about 4 or 5. Just read through the cases. We give a little bit of information on as you read through. It's back a few months. And where we moved from we moved everything from the state's court into the federal court.
What was the one about no limitation, no statute of limitation? You got something like that?
Yeah, statutes of limitations are statutes. There are no statutes in common law.
Is there a law or a case?
It's logic. That's it, period. There is no statute.
Can I break in? Because I get the statute of limitations thrown at me all the time. Fraud vitiates all procedures. So once you show that they have executed a fraud upon the court, then there are no statute of limitations issued.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I accidentally muted you. I was trying to mute someone else. You were being repeated.
Okay. Well, this is really important because I fight this battle every single day. There's a number of, they always throw statute of limitations at you. First of all,
Hold on a minute. Tana, can you mute your mic? Are you on a computer or on a phone? Tana.
I'm on a computer and I muted it.
Yeah, mute your mic. Because she's feeding back in through your mic and in through your speakers and in through your mic. So just mute your mic as she's talking or anyone else is talking. Go ahead, Lydia. I'm sorry.
Okay, there's a number of different ways to overcome the statute of limitations issues. I'm going to give you 3 or 4 right away. The first thing is, because I get this question thrown at me all the time. If they executed fraud upon the court, particularly in New York State, there's one piece of case law everybody cites to it. Fraud vitiates all proceedings, from the highest to the lowest. I don't care where you are, in court, in a club, in a public agency. Fraud vitiates all proceedings. So once you show that there's a fraud upon the court, there are no statute limitations issues. Once you show that they've created a false court record by the sin of omission or by false statements of material fact, there are no statute limitations issues. Another issue, active fraudulent concealment active fraudulent concealment tolls or stops the statute of limitations. Because one, if they're actively concealing something, so for example, if you get a subpoena and they refuse to respond to that subpoena or you show that there are missing documents, you don't even have to do that. Do a FOIL request, a Freedom of Information Act request, and you show they're not providing you with full, true, and complete information. Again, active fraudulent concealment stops or tolls the statute of limitations. Another issue, any constitutional violation, again, stops the statute of limitations. So it could be intrinsic fraud, which means it happened in the court, or extrinsic fraud. So, you know, anything they do that's hoodwinking, dirty dealing, trying to fool you, show how they do it, and that stops the statute of limitations because, and you always remind everybody, this isn't a game that we're playing where you're trying to create a false court record and you know what the elements are to make any charge and you're playing a little game. We are supposed to be helping the judge in a truth-seeking process. And when you try to fool the judge in all the different ways, you have to tell half-truths and muddy the waters, then there are no statute of limitations issues. You don't get rewarded for making a false court record through the sins of omission and false statements of material fact and violating the Constitution. So you don't worry about that. I'm done now.
Jack, can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead. Just let me just add something real quick. You know, everything Lydia had said is pretty much true, but you can go a step further. Remember, you're always looking to bring this court back into your court because you can't let them run away with it. Again, when we get back to common law, this is not going to happen anymore. But until then, you got to bring this court back into the common law. And once you bring it into the common law, you just object. Say, look, in common law, there is no such thing. There are no statutes. And since there are no statutes, except for those who that bind down the elected individual, the bureaucrat, and so on. Those statutes are there for them. But other than that, there's no statutes against me. There's no such thing as a statute of limitation. It just doesn't exist, which means you could have a case that's 50 years old, and if you can resurrect all of the evidence and find people still alive to bear witness, and it's clear enough, and you can prove it to a jury, it's good. You're good as gold. But, of course, you're going to have to make your case on an old case, so it's tough. It gets real tough. But other than that,
In 2 minutes or less, here's what you can do to really show how they violate their own rules, and this is very helpful. When we get off the conference call at your convenience, you'll Google something called judicial notice. Get one irrefutable fact in your case from a source that cannot be questioned, and make a motion to the judge to take judicial notice of this fact, and demand an open public hearing, which is mandatory once a party requests judicial notice. They'll never give you the hearing. So they will, right there, deny you due process and your constitutional rights. Now you're done. You're in federal court. All you got to do is ask them to take judicial notice and find one irrefutable fact. Trust me, they will never have an open public hearing. You will never, pursuant to judicial notice, which is mandatory, and you will project your case in federal court with a due process violation and denial of equal protection. The simplest thing you can do. I'm done now.
Okay, thank you, Lydia. All right, who wanted to go next?
John, can you hear me, Jen?
I can hear you.
Okay, Jen, I got to run this by real quick. I tried to call you last week, but I only had 1 minute. I got this terrible traffic issue with my former wife's son. I'll do it real quickly. May 22nd, he just pulled over. He was traveling, not in transportation. He called me on the phone. I counseled him, and they got scared. They told him to put the phone down on his car. They arrested him, put him back in the police car. There was 3 cop cars in his and a motor pulled up 5 cars in line. So they put him in the back. The phone's still on. I'm listening. Cop comes back up. I heard him. He's whispering, admitting he's going to break the law, and he shuts off the phone. I heard him say, he says, I don't like this one bit, whispering. He takes the phone back to the mother, the 5th car in line. She sees what's going on. She says, why can't my son have counsel? He says, is that all you think about? Now I know what's going on in your house. So the car was seized. There was no crime committed. They're all infraction tickets. Then we went to court June 2nd. As the ticket said, there was no judge there. They made a mistake with the printing. There's a deputy there tried to force the young man to make a plea. He put the pen down on the paper, and I told the officer that he's not going to plead. You have no jurisdiction. We said, we want a receipt. We got the receipt. They never called him back. It's from June 2nd. I'm missing some things, too. I wrote letters to the play yard telling them they stole the car or they had possession of a stolen car. I wrote a letter to the police chief telling the whole story, and he went right back to me. He wanted me to make an appointment. He wouldn't answer my question about his oath of office. And then finally, on July 22nd, the play yard sold the car, supposedly. We called there. They said it was sold.
What happened? I think we lost that caller. Hello?
Hello. Hello, John?
Yeah, hang on a minute.
Yeah, we're still on the air.
Yeah, we lost that caller. All right. Hopefully the caller will call back when, if you can hear me and you're trying to get back, just break into the conversation. Meanwhile, who else called?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Is everyone?
Hello?
Can you hear me? This is Trisha.
Yeah, but you're coming in awfully low. You have to raise your mic or get closer to your mic.
Is that better? Can you hear me better now?
You're still very low. Can you get closer to your mic or raise the volume on your mic?
I'm trying. How's that? Is that better?
Well, let's try. Go ahead. Just speak loud and up again to your mic.
You had said earlier about the notice and demand, and I can't find it on the website. So can you be a little more specific? I looked in as many places as I could try to find it, and I don't seem to see it.
Okay, if you go on to essays and lectures, okay, you highlight that. Then go to court access, highlight that. Well, actually, at court access, click on court access course. Click on that, and you should have notice and demand in those downloads. I'm looking right now. Court procedure book, it might be in there. I don't remember. Court handbook, it could be in there.
Okay, so one of the
books. Should be in there. If it's not, you'll have to get back to me and let me know, and I'll try to get it up there, but it should be there. Let me see if there's any other place. You can also go to court access course and then go to court case examples, okay? And you click on that, and when you come to that, let's see what we have here. Maybe it's in here. Okay, yeah, I don't see it in here. It's probably inside the court access course.
Thank you very
much. Oh, wait a second. File on demand right here. Below are a few examples of some case documents, file on demand and file on demand 2. There's two papers on it. Also on the top, there's a file on demand. So there's three.
So it's file and demand, but that isn't, that's to get something into court. It was the notice and demand that you were talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. That's a file and demand. I got confused. Yeah, notice and demand is what it is. Yeah, it should be in the course.
Okay.
If you don't find it in there, let me know and I'll try to get it up there and I'll put it on the case examples, maybe the court case example area.
Thank you so much. John, I appreciate it. Blessings to all of you.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, John, this is Walt. Can I get finish up real quick what I was saying?
Yeah, go ahead. What happened? You disconnected?
I don't know. Yeah, I just got cut off.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, like I said, the letter's from the court. The judge's name is at the top. Then you got the young man's name and his address. It's the people of the state of New York versus the young man, the case number, the five traffic tickets, VTLs, vehicle traffic law. Then it says this, John, incredible. The next date, September 4th, time 5 o'clock. It's not even a summons. It says, please be advised that the above caption matter is scheduled for arraignment on the date and time listed above. Very truly yours, Judge Michael Schiano. I never heard of such a thing. This isn't even a summons to go. I think they're trying to trick him to come into the court.
Well, first of all, this is a town court, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, because they don't hear it anyplace else. Sue him. And I'll tell you what, since he took the car away and they didn't have the authority to take the car away, that's a federal case. That's the due process. That's your cause of action, if you want to call it a cause of action. That's what gives the authority for the federal court to hear it, is that they violated your right of due process. And they seized your property without due process.
What about not even showing up for this because it's not a summons?
Well, again, you got to be careful. There's nothing more frightening than ignorance in action, because they'll use their, you know, you called the wrong police department. You called the corporate police. The corporate police are never going to stick up for you. And there's a probable chance that the sheriff might not, because he's kind of dumb. And it's unfortunately, that's the facts. Sheriffs are dumb.
But remember,
we were dumb too, so we got to educate them. So you should have called the sheriff and reported it to him and pressed him to go get your car, because they stole that car illegally.
I talked to the state police and the attorney general, and they hung up on me, both of them.
Yeah, because they're both corporate. They're part of the corporation. They're getting payback. They're getting money out of all that.
Yeah. So what I want to say real quick, John, is when the young man goes up, I'm going to be with him. Now, I have the right to stand there with him, even though I'm not an attorney, right?
he may tell you to stand down, to back off, and say you can't talk in here. I would take this into the federal court, federal issue right now. You lost
the
court,
right?
Well, how
would I stop the action in the court? When the young man goes before the judge, how do we stop it then?
I have a very simple method for
you. Gerard, you trying to talk there? Because we can barely hear you.
Really? No,
yeah, get closer to your mic or something.
Hang on. Listen, he's got, there's a really simple method for him here, because that is a summons. That's like a ticket. And they want, and that, and when you go in for a ticket, it's an arraignment. Now, if he follows the get-out-of-jail-free thing and he goes in and says that he doesn't want to plead, he needs time to find an attorney, that gets him out of the courtroom. Remember that get-out-of-jail-free Freeman Burt video?
Mm-hmm. Right.
He instructs you what to say when you're in front of the judge, and you get released in your own recognizance, and then you don't go back in, so you can't get arrested. You send a team of people in. You can go in, your wife can go in, and they may not like it, but it's still they still can't get him for contempt for not showing up.
Right, but I would do, you could do that to get more time, but immediately go and file a federal lawsuit.
Like tomorrow?
Exactly.
Yeah, tomorrow. You could do it for free. You go up there and you do a file on demand on it, and you put it on, you file the papers, okay? And when they ask for money, you tell them, no, there's a file on demand. Did you read that? I don't pay. I'm one of the people. And they'll say, well, okay, you got to fill out this form. And then you refuse to fill out the form. You say, no, I don't fill out forms. I'm one of the people. Read the file on demand. It says that you have to take it under penalty of law. So you better take that paper. And they'll take it. Federal courts usually take it. And then you let it go through. The judge may try to squeeze you for $400, but you're going to have to argue with him. But I doubt it. Unless he really wants to get rid of the case, and he would do that in the beginning. But in any event, you file it there, and they robbed you of your car. First of all, it's a nisi prius court. It's not constitutional court. They have no authority. A statutory court has no authority to fine or imprison, so they can't do any of that. They took your vehicle without due process. Well, who are these people? Who do they think they are? You sue them all. You got to sue the judge. You got to sue if there's a prosecutor. You sue the prosecutor. If there's any other lawyers in that courtroom, you sue them all. Sue everybody.
And what did you call that file? And when you go to the federal court, you make them take the papers without the application.
Yeah, on top of your papers, when you file your papers, on the top of the paper, you put a piece of paper. It's called a file on demand. You'll find that up in court examples on our website.
Okay, can the young man go say this when he goes in front of the judge? Can he say, I'm here on special appearance, sir, and challenging your jurisdiction? I was not in transportation or commerce.
No, don't get lost on that, because they're going to try to get you. You can just go in there and you can say, I am here on special appearance. I mean, that kind of, you don't have to go into further than that, and you don't go into challenging jurisdiction. If you're going to say anything like that, you tell him he doesn't have jurisdiction. You know, it's a statutory court. I'm under common law. Every judge is obligated to obey the Constitution under the Article 6, which is the Supremacy Clause.
Okay, should we mention anything to that town court that there's going to be a federal case?
When is your court case? What date?
The 4th of September.
Well, you're waiting until the last minute, huh?
I tried last week, but I couldn't get through.
Yeah, you got to do your papers into the federal court. Yeah, you better go up there, because they're going to put an arrest warrant out on you if you don't. Trust me, they do that. So you go up there and you do the one that Gerard said. I like that one. Look, you know, Your Honor, I haven't really had time to deal with this, and I need to get some legal advice, so I can't plead. I want to talk to a lawyer first, and I'm looking to hire a lawyer. And he'll give you 30, 60 days. Okay, so fine, you know, you go, and in that 30, you better do it in the next week or two, file a federal case. Once you file a federal case, you sue the town, you sue the cop, you sue the judge, you sue the prosecutor. Every person that touched that case, you sue them all, and you bring the whole thing into the federal court, that court case stops. Can't go no further.
Well, thank you very much, John and Gerard. Thank you so much.
John,
okay, you're welcome.
Donald
here.
Can you hear me? Can you
Donald
hear
me?
Go ahead.
Okay,
yeah,
sorry.
I'm hearing two people talking, but one's very, very low and the other one's not so much. Raise your volumes. We'll get closer to your mic. Go ahead.
Am I the one that's up a little higher or low?
Well, go ahead, try. Speak closer to your mic. You know, you're low.
Yeah, he's the
both
low
of you are low.
Hello, it's Donald here. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, hey, listen, I'm down here in Florida. I'm a Martin County organizer.
You got to get closer to your mic or raise your mic or speak louder.
All right, I'm right is up it, on top. Can you hear me? Right.
Is it me or is it him? Gerard, can you hear him?
I can hear him. I mean, it's a little, I can hear him.
Yeah, he's low, though, right? All right, go ahead. Go ahead.
Hey.
Anyway, listen,
that's
two
good.
Weeks ago, I was arrested for standing in my Fourth Amendment right, preventing a Fish and Wildlife Commissioner from inspecting my cooler. I established that he had no probable cause because he asked me if I caught any fish. I said no. He asked if I minded going into the cooler. If I mind, he went in my cooler. I said, I do. Ultimately, I was arrested for interference, but my question is...
Did you get arrested by the corporate police?
I was arrested by the corporate police, handcuffed, put in jail, had to post bond for standing in front of my Fourth Amendment right on the cooler issue. So
you should have called the sheriff, but go ahead.
Well, the sheriff is who they handed me off to. And when they handed me off to the sheriff for transport to jail, the sheriff said to me, hey, so you're one of them sovereign citizen folks, aren't you?
Yeah, he's tainted. Yep.
Well, that stems from my, over the years, fighting the Fish and Wildlife Commission with regard to them getting my cooler. And most of the time, those representatives are smart enough to back off. However, this time I was violated. My question is, I don't even want to step into their county court at all. Can I go directly to the federal courts, since the whole issue to begin with is on my Fourth Amendment right?
Well, they arrested you, so they kidnapped you. Absolutely, that makes it a federal offense.
All right, so I have this arraignment for the 11th, and so what my claim is...
You better get
your
federal case. You got to get your federal case open and sue everybody. Sue the judge, sue them all.
Understood. Now, do I have to file any paperwork within the county at all, or do I just go to...
Well, once you file with the, if you sue the town and you sue the cop, I don't know if you can sue the judge. Has the judge heard anything yet? He's willing to hear it.
Well, they are willing to hear it. As a matter of fact, I called the state attorney today to be honorable and tell them that they're treading, you know, this is a constitutional thing and that I don't think that they want to even go forward with this. And they got very curt with me and shut me off and said the only way...
Okay, there you go. End of subject. You make sure you get all that in your affidavit. Remember, no affidavit, you don't win. You have no prima facie case. Okay, so you do your affidavit, you sue the judge, you sue the cops. Every cop that touched you, including the sheriff or the deputy, whoever it was, sue them all.
Oh, yeah.
You sue the cops, you sue the prosecutor, if there's a prosecutor involved at this point, you sue the judge, and you sue the town. You sue them all, and you go into federal court with it, and when you file in federal court, remember, you got to serve everyone. Okay, so everybody's got to get served. So once they get served, they know that they can't hear that case no more.
Understood. Thank you. Now, I want to point out that this is the Florida Fish and Wildlife. This is the state of Florida who sent their tyrants down on me. And someone at dispatch told that young man that I was a sovereign, because when I asked the sheriff where did he come up with that sovereign crap, he said, well, FWC told me you were a sovereign citizen. And I said, well, I don't even know what that is, you know, because it certainly isn't me. Anyway, so that means that somebody in Fish and Wildlife, it goes deep into that office where they profile.
Well, you got to sue them too. You got to sue that person. You got to sue that person personally from the Fish and Wildlife. You got to sue the Fish and Wildlife. They, even though that's the state, you sue them all. Sue them all.
Yes. Well, I intend to. I identified his supervisor who was standing next to him.
How many days were you in jail?
I got out within 24 hours. But
okay, so they all have to go to jail for 10 days apiece.
Well, here's the thing, though. Under the 18 and 42, under federal rules, I mean, I want to prosecute them criminally in federal and civil. I want to do both actions.
Right, and you can get them for jail time for that too, but you still want them to serve 10 days for every day you in jail.
Understood. Okay.
Plus whatever other time you can get for the 42 and 18.
Right, exactly. Okay, now I looked at his supervisor and I said to him, now look, I told him several times he's violating my rights. You're standing there, you heard me say that. Are you going to let him do this? He said to me, I'm just supervising, so it's up to the incident officer. So now I feel that he has, he's neglect to prevent.
Absolutely. They're all guilty.
Okay. Right.
That was a conspiracy. Remember, the charges of conspiracy are there.
That's correct.
They conspired. They all conspired and worked together in unison. That's a conspiracy.
All right, so I don't need to do anything but file my fitter. Now, how do I get the criminal part of that action going? I understand the civil. I can file a lawsuit in federal court. That's fine. But how do I get, who do I call? Who's the agency that would enforce the violations of my civil rights? Illegal search, kidnapping, all those things.
There is nobody that's going to help you. You got to do it yourself.
Here's what you do. You go to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Criminal Division. You have your affidavits. It don't matter who's going to give you a hard time. I did this with Corey. I did this with myself in the Eastern District of New York. They're going to try to stop you any way they can. You don't care. You're very respectful. You go there. They're going to try to deter you any way you can. You say, I want to talk to you. You go to the Criminal Division. They got a time date stamp there. You time date stamp your complaint. You sit there and you say, I want to talk to the paralegal who assists the Criminal Division. You sit there. She comes out. She talks to you. You hand her your time date stamped complaint. You have two. You time date stamp your complaint, and you give them a copy. You can prove you were there. Bring friends with you. And you've got two copies of your complaint and your affidavit. Both are time date stamped. One you give to the paralegal who assists the Criminal Division. One you keep for you. You go into court. You do your civil stuff. You don't hear from the U.S. Attorney's Office in 60 days. They've declined to prosecute your case. Now you can go and prosecute your case. And you go forward and you cite all your criminal statutes. And you go forward in federal court. So all you got to do is notify the U.S. attorney and have them not contact you for 60 days, and then you go forward as a prosecutor, and you're done.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And remember, this tape is up there, so if you need to rehear that, you could just, once we post the tape, you'll be able to rewind and listen. Yeah, go ahead next.
John, am I coming in okay? Am I...
Yeah.
Does it sound okay? Okay.
You're good.
I have my niece. I want to try and write a paper to the judge. I need some advice. Obviously, it's a nisi prius court. But what it is basically is my niece. This incident happened May 19, 2009, and they're just now finally going to court about it. But basically, on or about the 27th day of April 2009, willfully and unlawfully entered a commercial building occupied by Macy's with the intent to commit larceny and any felony. So,
who entered the building?
My niece Jenica, okay, and her friend Megan, and basically what they're kind of trying to do, from what I gather, they're trying to shoplift, but they didn't. They put everything back because they had second thoughts, and then they left, and then that's when they got stopped, and they didn't have anything on them, but they still filed charges, and there's the state of California is the plaintiff, and I told Jenica, no, you need to reverse this and make yourself the plaintiff, because this is...
Well, I would first, in that case... You know, you hate to put yourself into the situation. You know, you got to think about this. You can never give them jurisdiction, so that's a problem.
But I'm not guilty, though.
You know, it sounds, but then you gave them you're giving them jurisdiction by pleading, But one of the things you'd like to try to do, and maybe, you know what the heck, look, go into the court and say, hey, look, tell them the truth if you want, or just tell the way it is. Look, there's nothing on me. They didn't have nothing on me. What are you talking about? Read the complaint. There's nothing here. Why am I here? See if you can't get out logically arguing with the judge that point. And if not, then the next time or after you leave, you write a paper and says, "Oh, I just discovered, you know, I'm a really one of the people of the state, and this is an E.C. Priest court, and I don't belong here. Open your court of record and sue them." And so you could do it that way. But first try to reason, because this sounds like a case that the judge may go along and say, "Yeah, I agree. Let's get rid of this case." And besides that, it's so many years ago. That's the other thing. If this happened in 2009 and you just got the paper,
well,
or they've been putting this off this long.
Yeah, they put it off this long, and it's strange to me. It's really cheap.
Well, there may be a statute. There may be a statute, and I'm sure there is, that they have to hear the case in a certain amount of time. Obviously, that's not a speedy trial to begin with, even in their terms. What is it, town court?
Yeah, it's the Superior Court of Shasta County. It's the Redding branch of Redding,
California. Well, go look up in the statutes. Go look in the statutes and see what they got, because, let's see, 2009, that's 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 5 years, and you haven't had a hearing?
Right. So maybe,
well,
maybe
I think the statute of limitations are done on that. Use the statute of limitations.
Okay,
you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Were they arraigned on the charges?
They were. It's sort of like an indictment. Yeah, they were arraigned on the charges.
They pled?
Excuse me, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Did they plead innocent or guilty?
You know, Megan pled guilty for some reason, and then Jenica pled not guilty.
Well,
and that's 5 years ago or now?
Look at if they were arraigned and they pled, they're done, because they would have had to give them they have to do something within, I think, 45 days of an arraignment. They have to let you out of jail. Like, if you're in jail and they don't arraign you within 45 days, they have to let you go, and then they only have so much time after that to actually bring you to court, which, if this is 5 years, I don't think the statute is even that long.
I'm sure he's
going to find a statute that'll get rid of this thing. And also the fact that, look, you're saying I stole something. What did I steal? Where's the evidence? Where's the affidavit? Where's someone with an affidavit saying that they caught me with something? Because if you look on the report, they didn't have nothing.
No, they don't. That's what I'm going to tell her. I'm going to sort of, you know, kind of confront the judge and let her know there wasn't an arresting affidavit, and there's basically no proof that she stole anything, and she didn't. So, I mean,
you didn't have to go there. Isn't there, if there's a report, the report needs to say that they got something on her or they didn't, right?
Yeah, and there isn't a report at all of that.
Right, so there's no report of anything being stolen. Why are we even here? Besides that, you bring up statute of limitations.
Okay, excellent. Yeah,
John,
I directed.
And again, yes, Rick.
You had said you were going to end.
Yeah, you were leading in
early today, and then you didn't. So
I know.
I was just wondering, are you still having that meeting?
Yes.
Are you having that meeting?
I'm going to have a meeting right after. Yes, I am. I'll be around for at least 20 minutes.
I was going to say, we're having a roundtable tonight with anyone who wants to call in on BK's show next.
Okay.
So I was going to say.
Listen, John, before you go, could I just ask everybody for one thing?
Well, make it real quick, because we're about to lead out. Okay. The program's going to end in 1 minute. Matter of fact, the program's ending. We'll have to
pick
up next week.
Okay,
Lead us out. Anybody who wants to call me on the 233 number. Go ahead, Rick.
Love all
you got
guys.
Okay, can I just say something real quick for everybody?
No, we're leading out. We're on a radio station. Go ahead, Rick.
All right, thanks. You've been listening to Ask John, Common Law Questions about Common Law. We will see you Saturday night at 7 p.m., The Word with John DeRash. Saturday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And we'll be right back with BK. You're listening to Shake and Wake Radio Network.